BAFTA Award goes for the biggest bungle at the ceremony to the BBC.
To those watching at home, archive your loved ones, archive your stories, yesterday, today and forever, for Nigeria, for London, the Congo, Sudan, free Palestine, thank you.
And the BBC was able to edit that out, but not the N-word. Yet again, they've got themselves in a crisis. In other news, there's problems down Mexico way as the number of killings continue. Andrew Mountbatten, Windsor, charged taxpayers for massages and...
high standards and inclusion. It's not one or the other, it is both. From here on, every child will benefit from a broad school experience.
Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson here, taking your calls later in the show. News is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock. Lord Mandelson has been released on bail after his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office. He's been accused of sharing sensitive information with Jeffrey Epstein during his time as business secretary. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight is following developments.
Peter Mandelson was pictured leaving Wandsworth Police Station at around 1:15 this morning in the back of a car. It was some 8 hours after he'd been led out of his home in North London by officers and taken in for questioning under arrest. Police say he's been released on bail while their investigation continues. Lord Mandelson has previously denied wrongdoing.
New Zealand has followed Australia in saying it would support removing Andrew Mountbatten Windsor from the line of succession. The government here has said any such plans would come after the conclusion of the police investigation. The former prince was arrested on suspicion of misconduct in public office last week and denies wrongdoing. Western officials believe Russia is no longer able to recruit troops quickly enough to replace those being killed while fighting in Ukraine. It's the fourth anniversary of Moscow's full-scale invasion. Britain has announced a further £20 million worth of support for Kyiv. The Conservatives claim reforms to the special educational needs system will result in a mammoth burden being placed on teachers. Language therapists and specialist teachers training form part of a £4 billion package. The reforms are not expected to take effect in England until 2030. The Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson told LBC yesterday that she hopes the changes will rebuild parents' trust in the system.
Not only will children with complex needs see better support, but all children, including those who might struggle at different times when they're at school, but with the right support, their needs can be met. They will get a better system as well.
And the Education Secretary will be taking your questions live on Call the Cabinet with Nick Ferrari at breakfast this morning here on LBC. And a Tourette's syndrome campaigner says he's deeply mortified after he involuntarily shouted a racist slur during the BAFTAs. The offensive remark was made by John Davidson, whose life story inspired the film I Swear. The BBC has apologised for not editing out the sound of Mr. Davidson's tick prior to the broadcasting ceremony on Sunday evening. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,684. It closed down 2 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather dry and mild with sunny spells for large parts of England, some rain for the west of Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations, and Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases, but our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 3 minutes after 7, Tuesday, February the 24th, amid allegations that he shared government secrets with Jeffrey Epstein. Peter Mandelson, the architect, the chief designer of New Labour, is arrested. He has been freed, but we'll look exactly at what that means, not just for Mandelson or any potential, I stress again, potential criminal proceedings. what it means for Sir Keir Starmer and the government as well. Your opportunity, if you are involved in education, if you're a student and you're in such debt, if you have a send child, to put your calls and your questions to Bridget Phillipson, the Education Secretary, who heralded in the reforms, the biggest in a generation, we are told. She's with us in the next hour, but already not all parents are pleased with the proposals from the government. Victoria is an SEND teacher, the 9-year-old with severe anxiety, and she's told LBC...
My main concern is that it's a cost-cutting measure and that they are looking to reduce the number of EHCPs that are being given. It's difficult enough to get one and get the right support.
In other news, massaging the truth. It would appear that Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor managed to have massages and payment was made through the Queen's or the King's Bank of Coutts. Checks coming from that bank. We'll give you more details on that. In other news...
Mob rule and prison riot fights at a school in Gloucestershire as teachers walk out over student behaviour. I'm LBC's Thea Rickard with the details.
Plus, remember the tragic case of the two university students in Nottingham and the school caretaker close to retirement who were killed by the triple killer? Well, he was freed after mental health workers feared detaining him could be a racist move. Emma Webber is the mother of one of the victims, 19-year-old Barnaby.
I think it's the sheer number of institutions and the organisations and individuals that failed so epically and so catastrophically.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
After being in a police cell and now freed on bail after an interview lasting around 10 hours, arrested yesterday afternoon, which, as police sources will tell you, around 4 in the afternoon, allowing for interviews to take somewhere between 9, 10, or in Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor's case, 11 hours, nicking him at 4 p.m. was strange. Mountbatten-Windsor, you'll recall, was at 8 a.m. But he's out! Arrested, of course, on suspicion of misconduct in public office. The former ambassador to the United States was seen returning to his home around 2 o'clock this morning. The Met launched an investigation earlier this month. There are allegations that, while serving as a government minister, he passed on market-sensitive information to the late paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. But how did his career lead to this? The man, of course, who says he's a fighter, LBC's reporter Joseph Draper, has looked back at the life and times of one Mandy.
Peter Mandelson being led away by police from his home here in North London. But who is he and how did he get here?
They underestimated Hartlepool and they underestimated me because I am a fighter and not a quitter.
Ruthless, canny and politically savvy. A combination which made Peter Mandelson indispensable to the New Labour project in the 1990s, orchestrating events with the flick of a finger, dubbed the Prince of Darkness by Private Eye. But his time at the Labour top table was difficult. Less than 5 months after landing the role as Trade and Industry Secretary, he was forced to resign.
Mr Blair urged him to think about it overnight. They spoke again shortly after 10 o'clock this morning, and Peter Mandelson said that he wanted to go.
He failed to declare that he borrowed money from millionaire minister Geoffrey Robinson. Far from being in the political wilderness, though, he was back in cabinet 10 months later.
Be back, Mr. Mandelson.
Are you confident about the new brief?
But just over a year into the job as Northern Ireland secretary, the spinner-in-chief was in hot water once again after reports he pulled strings to help a businessman secure a UK passport after they pledged funds to the Millennium Dome. But the Prince of Darkness returned to politics for a third time.
Let me say this. If I can come back... can come back.
Firstly, as the European Commissioner for Trade. He was then ennobled, returned to the Cabinet, firstly as Business Secretary and then as the de facto Deputy Prime Minister, pictured going on holidays with the likes of George Osborne.
I think Peter Mandelson, he's spending quite a lot more time on holiday after that debate because I thought...
It's not very nice, is it?
David showed he's ready to...
I thought I'd made a friend on holiday. He turns on me in that sort of...
And with his vast business connections, Lord Mandelson returned once again as the current government's US ambassador, with the hope that the silver-tongued Prince of Darkness could win President Trump's ear.
The ambassador has repeatedly expressed his deep regret for his association with him. He's right to do so.
But it ended once again in scandal when it emerged he had a close relationship with financier and paedophile Jeffrey Epstein.
My knowledge of him is something that I regret. I wish I'd never met him in the first place.
Among millions of documents released by US authorities, there were pictures of him in his pants talking to a woman in what was allegedly Epstein's home.
Lord Mandelson has admitted to continuing his relationship long after Epstein was convicted, and that there are more embarrassing details we don't yet know.
He stepped down from his post and later from the House of Lords, but questions about his appointment almost brought the government down with him and led to a series of high-profile resignations inside Number 10, including of its chief of staff, Morgan McSweeney.
I'm exposing the huge mess that they're making, the cover-ups, the ridiculous appointment they made with Peter Mandelson last week, and also exposing the fact that the country is not being governed.
And on Monday, he was arrested at his home over allegations he may have shared sensitive information with Epstein during his time in public office.
Joseph Draper reporting in the studio with me is LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark. We'll get your political interpretation in just a second, Natasha. But firstly, since Joseph filed that report, there have been some developments. Just bring us those first.
Yes, well, of course. Well, obviously, the news last night about his arrest. And Nick, just firstly to say what a huge fall from grace from the man that was our man in Washington just 6 months ago, at the heart of the US and the UK governments. And as we saw on our screens last night and splashed all over the newspapers this morning, Lord Mandelson arrested last night just after 5 p.m. at his home in London, a stern, thunderous look on his face as he was led away to an unmarked car by two plainclothed officers. We do know that he was interviewed last night. We know that he was released on bail pending further investigations. He was seen leaving a police station in Wandsworth last night at around 1 a.m, arriving back at his home around 2. And the details of those, we understand he is accused of sending confidential information to the late financier Jeffrey Epstein as part of those emails that were in the Epstein files. They appeared to show he passed on sensitive information while he was in government, while he was business secretary. And we should also say he previously denied criminality and wrongdoing. So the offence, misconduct in a public office, the same one that Andrew Mountbatten Windsor was arrested on suspicion of last week. Very serious offence. It carries a maximum sentence of life in prison. Mandelson has also denied that wrongdoing in the past. Now, on terms of the government, last night the government has said that it will be releasing the so-called Mandelson files, which show what happened at the heart of government when he was appointed as US ambassador. However, they're not going to come out until March. Keir Starmer claims he was lied to by Lord Mandelson about the extent of their relationship when he gave him that top job as US ambassador. The chief secretary to the Prime Minister, Darren Jones, told MPs yesterday they would begin that release in a few weeks.
On that basis, the government expects to be able to publish the first tranche of documents very shortly in early March. I should, however, inform the House that it remains the case that a subset of this first tranche of documents is currently subject to the ongoing Metropolitan Police investigation. This includes correspondence between Number 10 and Lord Peter Mandelson, in which a number of follow-up questions were asked. Because of the Metropolitan Police's interest in this document, we are unable to publish it in early March in the first tranche, but will release it as soon as we're able to do so in consultation with the Metropolitan Police.
But Nick, of course, all of this comes at a key moment for Keir Starmer. It's a reminder again of the Prime Minister's judgment in appointing him in the first place, just at the time where Keir Starmer's desperately trying to get away from that. The sorry saga, which almost brought down his premiership a few weeks ago, which all of his MPs were saying, it's unsavoury things behind the scenes about this. He's got a key by-election on Thursday, local elections in May. His position, it's fair to say, is still precarious, and he is facing those questions about his judgment. According to the Metropolitan Police, according to those documents, he still can't prove what he knew and what he didn't know at the time he appointed him, Nick.
LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, reporting 13 after 7. Let's bring to the conversation Kate Bex, who is a KC, criminal barrister to be found at Red Lion Chambers, specialising in serious crime, joining me now. Kate, thank you for coming on. So, Andrew Mountbatten, now, and I'm not suggesting any collusion or indeed any wrongdoing for either of the two parties we're about to discuss. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor was released, quotes, under investigation. Peter Mandelson is released on bail. Can you explain to the listeners what's the difference? Good morning.
Good morning. So the difference is in relation to time limits and the conditions that can be imposed. So if you're released under investigation, there are no conditions attached to it. But if you're released on bail, the police can impose some conditions. I don't know whether conditions were imposed on Mr. Mandelson, but it will feel very much the same to both of them, whether you're released under investigation or on bail. There are time limits for it, and they can extend bail. And if they need more time, then they'll need to go to a court in order to get that extension eventually.
Kate, as someone who specialises in this field, some police sources are expressing surprise that the arrest took place at approximately 4 or 5pm yesterday, because you would allow normally for interviews to take somewhere in the region of 9, 10, 11 hours, as they did in the last case with Andrew Mountbatten Windsor. He was arrested at 8 in the morning, Mandelson at around 4 in the afternoon. Why do you suppose that was?
Yes, good question. But one also needs to remember that Mr. Mountbatten Windsor was also arrested on his birthday, and one might have thought, bearing in mind the age of the allegations, that that might not have been necessary. So it does leave the perception to a reader that perhaps they are not approaching it in quite the objective way that one might hope. I don't know, perhaps there's a very good reason, but arresting one on their birthday and one at 4pm in the afternoon might give the impression that there's a little bit of politicking going on.
Lastly, so much of this revolves, if again there is any wrongdoing, and I'm not suggesting there is, involvement with someone who's dead. How difficult is that going to be to try and prove any alleged wrongdoing if the other party is no longer with us?
Well, that's the beauty, or rather the difficulty with emails, isn't it? Never put anything in writing that you're not prepared to see again in court. And so with the emails having been disclosed, from what I've seen so far, I think they probably won't have too much difficulty in proving the act. What they will have more difficulty proving is the mental element behind it, the intent, and that it did amount to misconduct in public office.
And the possible benefit, of course, if any, took place. Kate, thanks for your time. Have a good day this morning. Kate Bex is a KC criminal barrister at Red Lion Chambers. Coming up in other news, there's problems down Mexico Way.
The U.S. State Department is telling Americans in Mexico to shelter in place as law enforcement tries to regain control of cities that have fallen into chaos in the hands of the Mexican cartels.
This is more than 24 National Guard troops have been killed. We'll bring you a live report on that. 7:16 LBC News headlines now then. Dominic Ellis.
Peter Mandelson has been released on bail after his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office. New Zealand says it would support any efforts to remove the former Prince Andrew from the line of succession. And events will be held in Ukraine later on the fourth anniversary of Russia's invasion. LBC weather dry and mild with sunny spells for large parts of England, rain for the west of Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very busy on the M1 southbound to Junction 13 at Bedford. It's because a car's broken down and one lane is closed for recovery. And the M25 is very busy anti-clockwise, heading towards Junction 12 at the M3. Now, there are big problems on the trains. It's because of an ongoing investigation between Gatwick Airport and Purley. One of the train lines has had to be closed, which is causing delays and cancellations for Thameslink Southern and Gatwick Express services. Also, Great Western Railway services are delayed between Gatwick Airport and Redhill. On the Underground, the Metropolitan line is suspended between Harrow-on-the-Hill and Rainers Lane, and there are severe delays on the Piccadilly line.
This is LBC.
This is your business. This is your business, supercharged with the help of Zero Accounting Software. These are your numbers. These are your numbers, sorted with the help of Zero Accounting Software. This is you.
Hi.
This is you taking business where you want with the help of Zero Accounting Software.
Hello, world.
This is your business supercharged with the help of Zero and having your numbers sorted all at the same time so you can finally focus on taking business where you want to. Supercharge your business today with the help of Zero.
Search Zero with an X.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
Idle pocket money sits in a piggy bank, rolling its eyes and twiddling its thumbs. Bored stiff. But if you open a free Monzo kids account, your child's pocket money is always busy. It earns interest in a savings pot and teaches them how to save for a future where they don't need to ask you for cash. Monzo, the bank that gets your money moving. For children aged 6 to 15, parent or guardian account needed first. UK residents only. T's and C's apply.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
The Philly cheesesteak is back at McDonald's and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese. Add two beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions and even more cheese. The Philly cheesesteak. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary. Subject to availability.
Across the country, thousands of drivers are feeling electric about switching to an EV. And here's why. They can go from London to Sheffield on a single charge that could cost around a fiver. They're ecstatic about that and the exhilarating feeling behind the wheel. Plus, with charging made simple at home, they're always ready for the drive ahead. I can see why they're into it. Switch to an EV and get that electric feeling. Costs and range dependent on tariffs, model and driving habits. For full details, visit gov.uk/clean energy.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
The time just coming up on 7:20. I will quickly take you through the front pages, although they have, of course, been overtaken by events, but they are all featuring the arrest of Peter Mandelson. Now Mandelson faces the music as the front page of the Daily Mail. The Times, Mandelson arrested over secrets passed to Epstein. Things can only get sweatier is the front page of The Sun. And let's take one last one at random. Here we go. Massive headline. Mandelson arrested. I have to say that I did find the commentary from one of the BBC journalists on the 6 o'clock news that I think we can assume that the people involved in the arrest are police officers because they've got body-worn cameras. I think the fact that on their lanyard it said police officer is probably, to me, is a bigger clue. Because staff in Sainsbury's and Asda wear those cameras. I think with the police officer around your neck, that's a clue. But obviously the story has indeed moved on. Peter Mandelson released on bail after 9 hours of questioning following arrest is the front page of the LBC app. So everything you need to know there. And I will just reference one other story. It is, of course, as you've heard already, 4 years since the start of the Ukraine war. And the Independent Online does some pretty powerful statistics there. Everything, again, you need to know. 15,172 civilians have been killed, including 739 children. 55,000 plus Ukrainian soldiers have been killed. The numbers just go on and on. Shall we finish with 96% of Ukrainian prisoners of war interviewed alleged Russian torture or mistreatment? It is a stack of figures. And if you are motivated by that story, as many of you are, that is the true picture and all the numbers you need to get a full sense of what's going on. Now, you're so wise and smart, the audience here, that you know we cannot take calls on Peter Mandelson because we don't want to, in any way, want to prejudice an ongoing investigation. You know that. But I sense the next story to which we're going to come is one where you will be able to get involved. And before I even get into it, let me remind you that Bridget Phillipson, the architect of the measures that we're going to discuss now, is here taking your calls in the next hour. Now, as papers report, thousands of children with special educational needs, SEND, are set to lose support packages to which they are currently legally entitled. The white paper, Every Child Achieving and Thriving, talks of a generational shift, with Bridget Phillipson, the Education Secretary, saying they must focus on helping white working-class children and changes to the school admissions code. Here's a little of what she said at a school in Peterborough yesterday.
Being aspirational for children with SEND shouldn't be radical. It's common sense. It's simply believing in them. This is about improving their support, not removing their support. No child will have to leave their school.
Very briefly, just to take you over the key points, as it were, special educational needs and disabilities, SEND spending, so spending on SEND, is expected to rise until at least 2030. And EHCP's educational healthcare plans cost £12 billion each year, and the spending is not set to come down for some years yet. Under this reform, schools must create individual support plans. So get ready now for ISPs to enter the lexicon. That's for pupils with SEND, guided by new standards to keep more children with special needs in mainstream schools. Once the new system is phased in, only those with the most complex needs will be given EHCPs. Children who are given them in primary school will have to have them reviewed when they enter secondary education. So how will that work? Well, Sarah Greaves is a SEND parent in London with three children. Can you briefly, if you would, Sarah, good morning, run us through your, if you wouldn't mind, your children's ages and if it's appropriate, their issues? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Yeah, so I have three children, all of which have a send need at some level. So the eldest two are 17 and 15, and they have quite specific learning needs around dyslexia and dyspraxia. And then the youngest is 13, and he currently has an EHCP, and he has a bit more of a complicated profile. So he is diagnosed with autism. He's also dyslexic, and he has chronic anxiety and a few other issues like speech and language processing speeds.
So you're right at the heart of this.
When you heard
the announcements from Bridget Phillipson yesterday, or you had time to read them, what was your initial reaction? And as you've had a night to sleep on it, what's your considered reaction, Sarah?
Yeah, I think my reaction is still the same. I mean, before the papers came out, you know, we've been waiting months and feeling quite anxious and worried, all the sort of send parents in the country. And, you know, the big things to me, seeing the system sort of face up at the coalface and having to, like, plough through it for the last 2 years or so, is that there's not enough funding, there's not enough capacity, and there's not enough accountability. And so we sort of all hope that those things would be addressed and looked at, and I think they're sort of trying to do that. I mean, the cash they're sort of talking about is there, but if you sort of break it down with some basic maths, it sort of doesn't turn out to much per child with send per week. And then the accountability.
Just walk us through those maths that you're talking about, if you would.
Yeah, so I took that sort of big 4 billion number and sort of divided it out by the number of schools in the country, roughly, and then sort of.
Isn't that funny? I did it the other way. I took the 4 billion, divided it by 1.7 million children. You get to approximately £2,300. Over 3 years, which approximately is around £700 per child per annum.
Yeah, I mean, I did it slightly differently and then sort of took out the 20% of a class that's roughly send, if we sort of believe those figures in terms of everything that they need from, like, you know, hearing needs, visual needs, dyslexia, etc. And I sort of got to maybe each kid with send might get 1 or 2 hours per week of additional support. So yeah, not much. And then I think the last thing is that accountability piece. And at the moment, obviously, even though the process is pretty terrible and everyone talks about it being a fight and a battle, there is some sort of legal backstop there, and you have got accountability, and you can sort of say, no, this is what's written down and you're not following it. Whereas I think with the new system, it just feels like we're moving from one sort of terrible kind of game show system where there's all these tiers you have to get through into a new one. But you haven't got any accountability at the moment, it seems, into these ISPs. There's even more acronyms coming.
I know. Always helpful. What do you want to hear from the Education Secretary when she's on LBC in a little over an hour's time?
Yeah, I think it's just a bit more understanding and care about the terror that us parents sort of feel, the worry and the concern that these things that our children have in place to actually help them access any type of learning are going to be removed. And, you know, we're all for getting as many kids as possible into mainstream and making schools inclusive. But I'm not sure that creating hubs where you put these kids is the way forward, or is inclusion, or that they're going to be fully supported to achieve their potential through these new packages.
I just want to play back one word to you, terror. But that's a very strong word. You'll stick by. Is it a terrifying situation then for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a terrifying situation to get to this point when you see your child struggling in school and suffering hugely with their mental health, and you've sort of fought for 2 years to get the right support in place. It's terrifying to think what might happen if that gets taken away.
Really grateful for your time. Good luck with the children. Thank you, Sarah. With those three children, 727. Scott's in West Hampstead. Scott is in West Hampstead. Scott, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Now, you worked in this field, I've got a note. Is that correct?
That's correct. I mean, I'm a retired educational psychologist, but, you know, my time in the education system goes back to the 1970s, and I worked in the great organization of Margaret Thatcher.
So that's the pre-Warnock report, then? That was before the Warnock report?
That's right. The Warnock report suggested way back in the 70s that 20% of children were, you know, are expected to have special educational needs. That's 1 in 5. But out of that 20%, only 2% actually So that would be 1 in 50 should have what would be like, you know, more complex, you know, more severe and complex needs. Mm-hmm. And that's still, I gather, the situation now where we're talking about 20% of the what the 2% should have. But I think it's much more than 2% because of the frustrations and the, financial, the problems.
Scott, as someone, as a professional in the field, lastly, Scott, what is the standout issue, do you think, that needs to be addressed from what we heard yesterday?
The standout issue, my feeling, apart from the fact that a lot of these changes are not going to come in until 2030 because there's a crisis now in the system. Mm. But the standout thing is, you see, what they're suggesting, this transformational new approach with new ideas, this was happening in the 1970s in the Inner London Education Authority. There was massive support. There was a Washford support in schools. I saw it in Harrow for 10 years when I worked there, 10-year period in the 1980s. And then in Islington in the 1990s, there were units attached. There was a massive amount of support. And the reason that a lot of parents are frustrated with the system is because that support was drying up as the funding was drying up in education authorities, so that, you know, more and more parents had to go via the statementing route, or what is now the education, health and care plan route. And that was by default.
I must end it there, Scott. Thank you for your input. Have a good day. More calls coming in on this. Alex, you will be the next caller. I remind you again, in a little over an hour's time, the Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, will be here taking calls on that matter. But in other news, speaking on LBC yesterday, Lib Dem leader Sir Ed Davey said we need greater transparency over the Andrew Mountbatten Windsor Epstein scandal.
The best way of addressing them is through transparency. I believe in a constitutional monarchy, absolutely, but the best way of maintaining that it weathers this storm, is that there is transparency and openness.
And is it right that the disgraced Duke's massages, for which he would often appear naked as the young woman arrived, were paid for on the Queen's bank account with a Coutts cheque, i.e. our money? We'll look at that in more detail. It's 7:30, you're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news is with Dominic Ellis.
Lord Mandelson has been released on bail after his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office. It follows allegations that he shared sensitive information with Jeffrey Epstein during his time as business secretary. New Zealand has followed Australia in saying it would support removing Andrew Mountbatten Windsor from the line of succession. The former prince was arrested on suspicion of misconduct in public office last week. And Western officials believe Russia is no longer able to recruit troops quickly enough to replace those being killed while fighting in Ukraine. Britain has announced a further £20 million worth of support for Kyiv on the fourth anniversary of Moscow's invasion. LBC weather, dry and mild with sunny spells for large parts of England. Rain for the west of Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 15 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
Why is someone eighth in line to her seventh? We don't need it. I think three, max. One, two and three, that's all you need. Everyone else can be jettisoned. That's because we don't need any more than that. And then they will be forced to, God forbid, go and get a proper job or, you know, actually contribute to their own piles of cash. That might be the way forward, I think. Don't see anything wrong with it.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
Forecasting sun with 100% chance of beach. There's still time to get up to £500 off package holidays in EasyJet's Big Orange Sale, or get flights from £28 one way. EasyJet, get out there. Selected dates and flights, limited availability. Holiday sale ends 3rd of March. Min spend and ATL protected. T's and C's apply.
You want £1 million.
I'd love £1 million.
So you enter the birthday draw and you think of a way to spend £1 million.
I'd quit my job and I'd finish my novel.
It's a lucky day, and you win the birthday draw.
Yes!
So, what's the book called?
Neil, the Vampire Detective.
Sounds awful.
Who cares? I'm rich!
Is it your lucky day? For your chance to win £1 million, just search The Birthday Draw and enter now from Global and ITV. 18 plus UK only, no purchase necessary.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident when investing your capital is at risk.
My name's Mark, and this is my NHS story. The sensation in my neck was painful all the time. Once I spoke to my GP, they referred me to my CDC. They got me in very, very quickly. The amount of pain I went through for something so easy, why hadn't I done this 4 months before?
The government is opening new community diagnostic centres, with many already available 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, so the NHS can be there for all of us when we need it. Find your closest one at gov.uk/NHS Fit for the Future. Available England-wide.
The Hillary sale ends soon, so get window-wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window-wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:34 is the time. Alex, you'll be the next caller on our conversation about that SEND reform, or indeed SEND reforms. And again, to remind you, Bridget Phillipson here in a little under an hour taking your calls. Now, into the world of business and commerce, joined by Christian May, who's editor-in-chief at City AM. And on City AM Online, some bosses and entrepreneurs are calling for a reset of the UK. What are they talking about? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I like entrepreneurs because they are by nature problem solvers. And a group of them have come together now to launch a new organisation today called Enterprise Britain, which is focused on the biggest problem of our time, which is how to pull the country out of what they call the doom loop of despair. And I think they offer a really useful mixture of candor about the state of our problems, but also optimism and solutions critically. So who's behind it? Well, it's been launched today and it's being co-chaired by the founder of OVO Energy, Stephen Fitzpatrick, and Brent Hoberman, one of the most prominent entrepreneurs in the country. Together, they have pulled in an advisory board of many other entrepreneurs, and they've launched their organization today with a report, which, as I say, talks about the urgent task and a narrow window of opportunity in which Britain can regain its place in the world. They also talk about the fact that being pro-business, putting forward pro-business policies, pro-growth policies, is meaningless if the public don't feel that they're also going to benefit from commercial success, corporate success, economic growth. So they go into that side of things as well. But they're talking about quite a radical shake-up of policy, new tax incentives, new changes to the labour market, new innovations and ideas to help drive investment and access to talent. I think it's a really interesting collection of policies. I'm going to be interviewing these two entrepreneurs at CCAM tomorrow, so I'll find out a bit more about it. But I'm very encouraged that people who have launched and grown and sold businesses are now putting their efforts into helping other people do the same.
Let's talk about how £10 billion, I repeat, £10 billion can be misallocated in a certain area. Come on, Detective Inspector May, where's it gone?
Yes, at the risk of, I suspect, irritating a percentage of our listeners, Nick, a new report from the think tank Policy Exchange says that the UK's HR sector, human resources sector, is bloated and is responsible for a whopping misallocation of capital up to about £10 billion worth, they suggest. They say that in the UK, the human resources sector is twice the size of that in the EU. In the UK, 1.6% of us work in HR, compared to 1% in the US and about 0.8% for the EU. And researchers say that not only is this a direct cost on businesses of all sizes, but there's also an opportunity cost. That is to say, the money that could be spent elsewhere is being spent in this side of things. Now, they take aim at all sorts of government policies and regulations that they say are responsible over many years for building up this industry. They take aim at equality, diversity and inclusion policies as well. So there's some controversial things within this report. It's been welcomed by a former head of the Equality and Human Rights Commission and indeed by Andrew Griffith, the shadow business secretary. So I hope it's going to spark a bit of a debate. No disrespect to listeners working in HR. I'm sure they can put up a robust defence of their efforts on behalf of the rest of us.
New figures out showing the level of violence and abuse on the shop floor. What do they tell us?
I think we'll all have noticed on high streets and outside many familiar brands now, it's pretty common to see security guards, beefed up security guards. You can argue the toss as to how effective they are given the shoplifting epidemic that continues around us. But related to that, new figures from the British Retail Consortium show that shop workers are suffering about 1,600 incidents of violence and abuse a day. Now, that is actually down by about a fifth on last year. And that might well be because of many police forces are focusing more on shoplifting. And indeed, as I say, many retailers and commercial estates are employing more security guards. But Helen Dickinson, the head of the British Retail Consortium, says that whilst the relentlessness of these attacks may have eased, the fear has not disappeared. And that for many of the 3 million people who work in retail, fear has become a part of the job. And when it comes to shoplifting, about 5.5 million known incidents of shoplifting last year. Although the Retail Consortium says that whilst it appears those numbers have fallen, that's actually not the case, almost certainly not the case, because it's down to a change in the way in which these incidents are measured. It used to just be that retailers would flock up the amount of lost and missing items, and now actually they have to report known and recorded incidents of actual theft. So two big problems still, but you will see a lot more CCTV, a lot more security guards, and a lot more body-worn cameras.
Lastly, how are we going getting on board women in the boardroom?
We're doing very well, and I suspect it's not a coincidence that the Policy Exchange report launching its torpedo at the HR industry and diversity initiatives was released on the same day that the FTSE Women Leaders Review published its research, which is very encouraging. It shows that almost 90% of firms in the FTSE 350, that's the 350 biggest listed companies in the country, are close to or have met the government-backed target of 40% of board positions held by women. 88% of firms in the FTSE 350 have at least 33% of all positions on their board filled by women. 70% of them are meeting that voluntary target of full 40%. It's a pretty good picture across the FTSE 100 as well. Where there is less progress is on women in executive roles, but the board gender balance has certainly improved, and advocates of that government-backed initiative would, I'm sure, look at the Policy Exchange report today and say, what are you complaining about? You know, we're making great progress here. I'm sure those two organisations can argue about who's right and who's wrong. But there is certainly good evidence of progress for gender equality across boards, and a little bit more to do when it comes to executive and leadership positions.
Christian Mayers, Editor-in-Chief at City AM, thanks for your input. 7:40. Let's go to another call concerning these SEND reforms, the biggest change in a generation, making schools more inclusive, 60,000 new places. That's the way the government sees it. But what about Alex in Stafford? Alex, you work in this field. Is that right? What do you do? Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Yes, I am a head teacher within a secondary SEN school.
What number, roughly, how many pupils do you have, sir?
We have got 173 on roll at the moment, and we are expanding next year to about 220.
Is it also a state or private-run school?
So this is a state-run school, Staffordshire County Council.
Right.
Now, one of the big elements, I think, about the reforms that have come out...
Yes, that's what I want to hear.
Within the SEN school sector, we're all planning for the future. We're developing infrastructure. We're looking at how we provide more opportunities for preparation for our adulthood. I think we are excellent at our inclusive approach to education. Now, one of the parts that I feel is far too grey at this point in time is what do we mean by complex? Because that could change the demographic completely for my plan and many other head teachers' plan as we develop our school, as we build infrastructure. Are we meaning complex physically? Are we meaning complex the level of social, emotional, and mental health that they have? We need to have a very definitive idea from the party so that we can have a plan.
Now, let me, in true teaching terms, let me show you my workings, as it were. It is my second question to the, or second area I know we need to cover, because the use of the word complex is so intriguing, because what is one man's complex is another man's ease. Do you see what I'm saying? I just don't get it.
No, absolutely. And I think at this point, it's far too easy to use the term complex, but what that will provide, what will happen is there will be a level of uncertainty, both within the field, but also for parents as well. There will be a lack of understanding of, is my young person who's currently in an SEN primary school, who is displaying what we have been told up until this point is complex needs, which is why they're not in a mainstream school. Are they now at their phase when they're going from year six to year seven? Are they going to be going into a mainstream where they'll be having an ISP, or are they going to be continuing in the SEN progression pathway? And I think there needs to be a lot of rigorous thought behind that process.
Really enjoyed talking with you, Alex. Thank you. I'll let you get on because you have to go and obviously take care and control of the school. And that is, I promise, number two on the issues I want to ensure. Hopefully I won't need to put the question, callers will, but it's an area we need to cover. Thank you for that. Now, another area that needs to be covered if we move to other stories is the cost of Andrew Mountbatten's Windsor's private massages on his overseas trip as Britain's trade envoy were picked up by the taxpayer, i.e. you and me, so retired civil servants have claimed. Let's bring into the conversation Sir Vince Gable, of course, was leader of the Liberal Democrats and indeed was business secretary. Sir Vince, in your role as business secretary, how would you characterise the input from the former Duke of York? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, he didn't do a great deal, but I inherited him. He'd been appointed, I think, 10 years earlier. I had a brief meeting with him at Buckingham Palace, and he asked me if he could make himself useful, because royalties are a valuable British asset, and he wanted to help promote British exports. And then shortly after I was in this role, the episode arose, the picture on television of his arm around the young woman who's the subject of the trafficking scandal. And I was asked if I had confidence in him, and I declined to say yes. And that set in train the process of removing him from the role. I mean, it's very clear now with retrospect, there was a whole lot of things happening that shouldn't have been happening, and we need a proper investigation into it. I think people in Parliament, certainly my party, are now calling for this. A lot of detail around expenses, but much else as well. And I think we shouldn't forget that while we're probing these allegations about misuse of expenses, there is the much more serious issue of the trafficking of young women, and they most certainly should not be forgotten.
Who was it who asked you your level of confidence in the former Duke of York's events?
I think it was at a group of journalists. I was in a public place on a ministerial visit, and I was just asked impromptu. I think it's fair to say that there had, in any event, been sort of mutterings in the background, my officials suggesting that this wasn't a very good arrangement. He was actually a volunteer. I mean, he wasn't appointed, but he'd been there 10 years, and that in his role, you know, some unhealthy relationships are developed, not particularly around Mr. Epstein, but, for example, it was said that he'd become a very close friend of the dictator of Tunisia, who was overthrown, which set in train the Arab Spring, and that was, you know, given Britain's interest in promoting democracy, that was not a great position to be in. And there were other episodes, too.
Let me ask you this. So, apart from providing work for masseuses on the four points of the compass, did the former Duke of York achieve anything in the interest of the United Kingdom?
Well, it was never reported to me that he had, and it subsequently emerged that some of his important visits seemed to be entirely independent of government. For example, we went on a major visit, the Prime Minister, Mr. Cameron, George Osborne, myself, to China in the latter part of 2010, and I've now discovered he'd been there about a month beforehand, engaged in independent work, and allegedly passing documents to his commercial associates. So there were things happening that were probably very negative. I didn't hear positive things. The one thing I actually asked him to do was to host a dinner at Lancaster House for a visiting Indian trade delegation. I got negative feedback about rudeness. I mean, it may or may not have been significant, maybe just jokes that didn't go down well, but that was the only direct involvement.
Just lastly, what sort of rudeness are we talking about, Sir Vince?
Well, I think jokes that didn't go down well with a visiting Indian delegation, that could have been more or less serious.
What are we talking? Supposedly Indian-themed gags or something? Where are we going with this?
Yes, I wasn't there. I can't report.
Right.
On
all right.
But to answer your question, I didn't get positive.
All right. News. What needs to happen now, Lastly, Sir Vince, as regards Mountbatten Windsor?
Well, certainly in relation to this trade envoy role, which I stress is almost certainly less significant than the much more serious allegations around trafficking, we certainly need a proper investigation. There is a debate, as I understand it, in Parliament this afternoon, at which there will be a call for, generally independent inquiry into what was going on, how was he appointed, what were the terms and conditions of his appointment, what he did and what he didn't do. I have tried over several years, actually, to get the information from my former department. When I turned up and asked to look at the files were empty. I also put in public information requests and was refused. So there's been a reluctance to make information available, and it needs to be out there now.
Grateful for your time. Good to hear from you again. Sir Vince Cable, former leader of the Lib Dems and, of course, business secretary at a time when the former Duke of York was supposedly our trade envoy, getting us lots of trade. Better just put in another one. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor denies any wrongdoing. 7:45 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Lord Mandelson has been released on bail after his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office. New Zealand has followed Australia in saying it would support removing Andrew Mountbatten Windsor from the line of succession. And Western officials believe Russia's no longer able to recruit troops quickly enough to replace those being killed while fighting in Ukraine. LBC weather dry and mild with sunny spells for large parts of England. Some rain for the west of Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very slow on the M1 southbound to Junction 13 at Bedford. It's because a car's broken down and one lane is closed for recovery. Also very busy on the A13 westbound. There are delays of about half an hour from Raynham to Barking. Albert Bridge remains closed both ways, so definitely do expect delays again this morning. On the trains, there are no Gatwick Express services running because of an ongoing investigation between Gatwick Airport and Purley, and then there are also delays and cancellations across Thameslink and Southern services. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Metropolitan line and minor delays on the Piccadilly, and also minor delays on the Bakerloo and Central lines.
LBC. Get 3 months half price when you switch to an unlimited SIM with Three. That means quick streaming, faster downloads, and more money to spend on the things you love. Join the UK's fastest 5G network and get your unlimited SIM today. Buy now in store or see 3.co.uk.
Unlimited 24-month light plan. Proof of switching required. Based on Ookla Speed Test Intelligence data 2H2025. All rights reserved. Subject to credit checks and terms.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
A Thameslink train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids' tickets for £2 at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturist. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. No medical questions and a cash payout. Search Sunlight cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
At the coast, one call could save lives.
Coast Guard.
In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Driving even a little too fast for the situation is a major cause of collisions, especially on country roads. Think. Don't let your speed creep.
The Philly cheese stack is back at McDonald's, and it's still intensely cheesy. Imagine the cheesiest thing ever. Now cover it in cheese. Add two beef patties, cheddar cheese sauce, crispy onions, and even more cheese. The Philly cheese stack. Did we mention it's cheesy? Available until the 16th of March 2026 from 11 a.m. Fees apply to delivery orders. Price and participation may vary, subject to availability.
The Hillary sale
end soon. So get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at Hillary's.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7.53 is the time and we're talking a lot about education. We've got Bridget Phillipson here in the next hour. We'll come back to more of your views on SEND, these biggest reforms in a generation, trying to make it fair for all pupils, irrespective of their background, their geography, whatever it might be. And we're staying with Education Matters because more than 50 teachers have walked out of a school in Gloucestershire and got on strike over student behaviour. They've told LBC that violence and disruptions continue to escalate since a teacher was stabbed by a student in 2023. LBC's West of England reporter Theo Rickards at the picket line now with all the details and joins us. Theo, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Teachers at Tewkesbury Academy claim fights between pupils are like prison riots and badly behaved students rule like a mob. This all 2.5 years since the school was plunged into lockdown when a maths teacher was stabbed by a student wielding a 6-inch blade. Colin, whose name and voice we've changed to protect his identity, says amid the violence, staff can't feel safe.
There was a fistfight between two students that degenerated into what people have described as a kind of mob rules, prison riot, going on the rampage through the light, group packs of students going, like, swarming.
Around 50 members of staff at Tewkesbury Academy first took strike action earlier this month, causing significant disruption to pupils' learning. And today I'm at the picket line outside the school as another 3-day walkout is underway, straight off the back of half term. Like Colin, Lisa, who is another teacher at the school, has had her name and voice changed. She told LBC another member of staff could be seriously hurt if nothing is done.
I've had a student swear at me, call me every name under the sun. I went and reported it. I was told not to take it personally. How far are they going to let this go before they start actually dealing with the behaviours?
The Cabot Learning Federation, which runs the school, told LBC these claims amount to nothing more than misinformation. They say what the dozens of teachers have told us does not accurately represent what life at Tewkesbury Academy is really like. But Ted Powell from the National Education Union says the federation needs to do more.
This school should be a priority for the Cabot Learning Federation in terms of actually extra money needs to go in there after what happened. Nobody wants that to happen again, and none of our members want to go on strike. That's what's so frustrating. They all want to be in school teaching these students, supporting these students in any way they can.
Here at the picket line this morning, Nick, the local community seems hugely supportive of the walkout so far, as you can hear almost continuously beeping car horns as they pass, to show solidarity with these teachers, some who say feel actively unsafe in the classroom.
Thea Rickard reporting from Tewkesbury Academy. 7.56 is the time. Let's get into our conversation. Actually, there are other emails coming in as well. We were talking in our business roundup with Christian May from City AM about the importance of entrepreneurs. Christian's saying he's going to be interviewing some of them. That's actually got some reaction as well. Let's feature some of those first. This comes in from John. The idea that entrepreneurs are the wheels that keep this country going is simply wrong. It is the regular workers, and they're the ones who are not being looked after. As ever, you're just focusing on the top end. You're not looking after the people who are at the other end of the structure. Similar theme from Brendan. Entrepreneurs care merely about the bottom line. Therefore, foreign call centres, AI, and offshoring their wealth. All I would say about foreign call centres is, and I think I've said this on air, and if not, I'll say it now, The fact that people have gone to four-day weeks or three-day week and you want to work from home 2 days in, 1 day in, don't be surprised that work is quietly, very quietly being removed from this country and sent elsewhere, where you can get it far, far cheaper than the rates you have to pay in the UK. So as unemployment rises, as it's the highest figures for a decade, as there's a 45% lift in graduates who cannot get a job, just let that figure hang in the air for a moment, 45% lift year on year for graduates. I mean, you could ask, and we are. I'm going to ensure that one of the issues that that's covered in just over half an hour's time is the amount of student loans and student loan debt. The average debt is nudging £50,000. There are cases where young men and women have got £80,000 worth of debt, and they're not in employment because it's so damn tough to get a job. They might never ever pay off these loans. And if you're thinking, well, that doesn't affect me because I never went to university or I've left university. Well, guess what happens ultimately if these young people become older people and never pay off the debt? Guess who pays off the debt? You're ahead of me. That's right. It's you and me. It doesn't seem to be a system that works. But let's say I've got a minute to do some of the emails and texts and tweets. Aaron in Derbyshire on the subject of Send. I served in the Coldstream Guards in the 90s with a chap who had severe dyslexia but had achieved majority AB grades at GCSE level. He came from a wealthy background, so got the support he needed to achieve good grades, but he still couldn't read or write to any sort of standard. My point is, if we're investing billions in the pursuit of academic grades in order to massage the egos of pandering parents, are we forcing these children to excel academically within uncomfortable classrooms and settings against their nature? Same subject. This comes in on the education system. From Anna, there are 118,000 children in independent schools who have SEND and do not use the state place their parents have paid for. The VAT on education has taxed out of the system a conservative 25,000 children so far. While you say you don't accept some figures, you would be in denial not to accept many of these children are now in the already overburdened state system. That's, of course, when you're saying you, that is directed at Bridget Phillotson, who's going to be with us later. But the next conversation to have is the award for the biggest bungle at the BAFTAs goes to the BBC. Now, here's filmmaker Akin Ola Davis Jr. accepting his BAFTA for the film My Father's Shadow.
To those watching at home, archive your loved ones, archive your stories, yesterday, today and forever, for Nigeria, for London, the Congo, Sudan, Free Palestine, thank you.
And the BBC editors were all over that Free Palestine line, but don't worry, they left in two uses of the N-word, and it was there until, for more than, roughly until yesterday lunchtime. How on earth did that happen? Elsewhere in the globe, the problems in Mexico, and we'll give you the number of fatalities as that, sadly, the figure continues to increase. News on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, Lord Mandelson has been released on bail after his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office. The UK's former ambassador to the US was detained at his home in North London yesterday. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight has more.
Lord Mandelson's arrest happened right as MPs were hearing the government still plans to publish some of its communications around his appointment as ambassador to the US. But because of the police investigation, ministers have warned there might be a delay to some of those documents being made public. Peter Mandelson's homes were searched by police earlier this month over claims he may have shared sensitive information with Jeffrey Epstein while he was right at the heart of government. He's previously denied any wrongdoing.
New Zealand says it would support any efforts to remove Andrew Mountbatten Windsor from the line of succession. The former prince was arrested on suspicion of misconduct in public office last week and denies wrongdoing. Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine is entering a fifth year. The UK has announced a new package of support for Kyiv. Keir Starmer will speak to allies later to discuss recent peace talks and next steps. Campaigners have raised concerns over new plans to overhaul the special educational needs system in England. The £4 billion proposals were outlined yesterday and include changes to children's education, health and care plans. By 2035, the support packages will be reserved only for children with the most complex needs. Sarah Greaves has three children who need specialist help and has told Nick this morning she's yet to be reassured by the changes.
I think it's just a bit more understanding and care about the terror that us parents sort of feel, the worry and the concern that these these things that our children have in place to actually help them access any type of learning are going to be removed. And, you know, we're all for getting as many kids as possible into mainstream and making schools inclusive. But I'm not sure that creating hubs where you put these kids is the way forward.
And the Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, will be taking your questions live on Call the Cabinet with Nick Ferrari at breakfast in the next half hour. And for the first time in the UK, a baby has been born to a mother who received a womb from a donor who died. Grace Bell was born with a rare condition, which meant she didn't have a womb. Grace gave birth to her son Hugo in London in December, describing him as her miracle baby. In the city, the FTSE 100 has just reopened at 10,684. It closed down 2 yesterday. The pound buys $1.35 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry and mild, with sunny spells for large parts of England. Some rain for the west of Scotland and Northern Ireland. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom, for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
When the days are cold and dark, we Swedes don't let the weather dampen our spirits. We make it as comfortable as possible. We light candles, settle into the sofa with a fika, sheltered from the world outside. We can't offer you a cozy Swedish log cabin, but we can give you the next best thing. Visit the Volvo new car event between 18th of February and the 11th of March for event offers on selected new cars across the Volvo range. Thoughtfully designed and shaped by the Swedish way of life, giving you that inviting feeling all year round. Order online at volvocars.com or book an appointment at your local Volvo retailer.
Offers vary by model and apply to model year 26. Retail customers only, subject to availability, terms apply.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
More than 3 minutes after 8 on Tuesday, the 24th of February, coming up in this hour. Just when you thought the BBC couldn't get more in it, they managed to pull it out of the fire. Yes, there's a hell of a row going on over why they edited one clip from the BAFTA Awards, why they allowed others to stay, and why the initial apology wasn't with the greater respect to the people who probably suffered the most. Rather, the two black actors who were on stage when the N-word was used and who showed tremendous grace and humility, by the way, in handling with it all. We'll get into that in more detail and ask, why do we continue to fund this bunch of clowns? In other news, we go elsewhere in the world to Mexico.
The U.S. State Department is telling Americans in Mexico to shelter in place as law enforcement tries to regain control of cities that have fallen into chaos in the hands of the Mexican cartels.
It's chaos and it's fatal chaos. Reports of at least 25 National Guard troops who've lost their lives. We'll get an update on that figure and we will have a report later in this hour. Back here in the UK, the allegations that racism in part led to the deaths of those two students and the soon-to-retire school caretaker up in Nottingham. He was, the three of them were failed because they didn't want to put the killer, Balder Kallikane, in any kind of detention because the high representation of black people already there. Reaction from one of the victims' mother, Barnaby's mother, Emma Webber.
I think it's the sheer number of institutions and the organisations and individuals that failed so epically and so catastrophically.
And in less than half an hour, this key government member is here taking your calls.
High standards and inclusion, it's not one or the other, it is both. From here on, every child will benefit from a broad school experience.
Yes, that's Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson, of course, talking SEND matters, but also talking student loans, talking graduates' jobs, talking all matters education.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
As they were handing out awards, let's out the one for the biggest bungle of the BAFTA night, and it goes to the BBC for their extraordinary ability to get it wrong on almost every occasion. Now, here is the moment. Tourette's activist John Davidson, the subject of the film I Swear, which, of course, won awards, including Best Newcomer and Best Actor, was heard yelling the N-word at the actors Michael B. Jordan and Delroy Lindo. We've obviously bleeped the actual word.
Delroy and I are delighted to be presenting the first BAFTA of the night for a vital part of movie making.
We're here to celebrate.
Now, all credit to them, the way they continue with good grace. But ultimately, there came an apology from BAFTA's host, Alan Cumming.
Tourette's syndrome is a disability and the tics you've heard tonight are involuntary, which means the person who has Tourette's syndrome has no control over their language. We apologise if you were offended.
Now, my understanding is approximately a 2-hour delay. Now, for those of you who are not in broadcast, 2 hours is effectively almost a lifetime. You can do so much in 2 hours. It really is. You can nip and tuck and lift and block and tackle as much as you need to. But they didn't as regards the N-word. Something the BBC did manage, though, was this comment, managed to edit, was this comment made by filmmaker Akin Ola Davis Jr. as he accepted his BAFTA for the film My Father's Shadow.
To those watching at home, archive your loved ones, archive your stories yesterday, today and forever for Nigeria, for London, the Congo, Sudan, Free Palestine. Thank you.
Now, there's been much discussion about Tourette's and how the condition can cause such outbursts. Indeed, if you were listening, you know we covered in part this yesterday. Speaking with my LBC colleague last night, following the A.D. Smith, a journalist and TV presenter who was in the audience, explained a little more about the circumstances.
Part of Tourette's, around 10% of people, in fact, have something called coprolalia. Coprolalia is where inappropriate gestures or words are basically shouted out. And John happens to have and be one of those 10% who have coprolalia. What I need to stress straight away, and I think this is some of the kind of miscommunication that's out there, is people who have coprolalia, when they say certain things, they do not believe those things. They do not have a particular viewpoint of what they are saying. And so by no means does that mean that the individual who shouted a word that is a racial slur, does that mean that they themselves are racist and that they are the beliefs?
Journalist A.D. Smith speaking with LBC last night. I have to tell you, subsequently, the Tourette's campaigner who yelled those words has said he's deeply mortified, his words, by his outburst. John Davidson, whose life story inspired the film I Swear, was out shouting that words. He apparently subsequently decided that he would leave the festival because he was fearful that he might cause further offence. Now, there's a hell of a row going on at the BBC about what they can and cannot edit. Let's bring into the conversation Chris Benatavla, who's former director of standards at Ofcom, now an independent media consultant who sits on the Sky News board. What, in your eyes, what did the BBC get wrong here? Good morning.
Good morning. I think the first thing that we should think is that the irony shouldn't be lost on this. This whole controversy arises from a person with Tourette syndrome shouting out a very inappropriate word at the very ceremony where an award has been given to this film about John Davison. Mm. And we wouldn't be discussing this on all the issues around Tourette syndrome without that occurring. So there is certainly an ironic tinge to this. Where did the BBC go wrong? Well, it's fairly obvious that this was a mistake. It wasn't a decision. And the N-word certainly seems to be audible. So I think the BBC needs to conduct, if it hasn't already, a very quick review and find out why it wasn't heard in the truck. And if it wasn't heard, why not? It seems to be quite a simple review. The whole purpose, as you've already indicated, of a two-hour review is to get rid of something like this. And the other issues were picked up. Why was this not?
The producers reporting, according to The Guardian, it's being reported that they claim they did not, I repeat, they did not hear those racial slurs. But even if that is the case, and I'm not going to dispute them, the content was allowed to stay on the iPlayer until just before lunch yesterday, Chris.
Exactly. And I do not understand why that is the case. The same happened at Glastonbury. They seem to take so long to make these decisions. 12 hours to take it down. It's a really simple decision. If you should have bleeped it, if it should apologise, then take it down, do a review, and then edit it out. I don't understand why it takes the BBC so long.
I sense you have a degree of sympathy for John Davidson, the man who unfortunately uttered those words.
Yes, I think what's been so interesting about this whole scenario is that we've got to understand a little bit more about Tourette syndrome, even those people who have not seen the film. This is involuntary. It goes through, it's not anything to do with malice. It's nothing to do with how they feel about the situation. But actually, Tourette syndrome makes them, these involuntary tricks occur. And I think it's fascinating that we're all having this discussion and we all understand a little bit more about it, even though this was clearly offensive. I think also it would have been helpful at BAFTA if they had apologised a little bit clearer and a little bit quicker during the ceremony.
That's my final question, and you've been in news, you've been in compliance, so this is, in a sense, is how the story moves on. The apology offered to Alan Cumming was for anyone who'd been offended by the use of that language. Surely there should also have been apologies to the two men who were effectively labelled with that slur as well, yet no consideration seems to be given to them.
Of course, I mean, I don't know exactly what conversations you had, but you're absolutely right. I think this tendency to say, if you were offended, quite often is a classic politician sort of apology. And I think we need to say, no, it was offensive, and we apologise, rather than caveat it in the way that we do.
Chris Bennett-Vala, you're former director of standards at Ofcom. You're now an independent media consultant and you sit on the Sky News board. 12 after 8. Let's bring to the conversation Nels Abbey, social commentator, regularly helps us on matters such as these. He's a media executive and author. He wrote the book Think Like a White Man, a satirical book, and he joins me now. Right, where do you want to start with this? There are so many elements to discuss, Nels. Which do you want to pick up on first? Morning.
Good morning. I feel that it is a tragic situation because Tourette's is, everybody recognises how Tourette's actually presents itself. It is not as if, I don't believe it's a reflection of the gentleman's heart. I believe it's a reflection of the gentleman's disability. And therefore, I think it's important that we approach it with that understanding there. Where the error was made was on the path of the BBC. The BBC, which many of us quietly call Blacks Be Careful behind closed doors. The BBC, once again,
Nels. I see where you're using the B and the C. Just elaborate on that a little bit, if you would.
Well, it's a term. It's almost like a satirical term because BBC regularly gets issues wrong when it comes to black people in particular.
Right.
So they actually use the term blacks be careful.
Got it. Okay.
It's a satirical term. But of course, like all satires, there are elements of truth in it. So again, the BBC got it wrong in a profound way. It shouldn't have gone out on air, and there should have been an apology made to Michael B. Jordan and Delroy Lindo. One of the most heartbreaking things is that Delroy Lindo, we don't really see him much in Britain. He was born in Britain, born and raised in Britain. We don't see him much in Britain. And then when he's on stage at the BAFTA, which should be a great homecoming for him, this happens to him. And then there isn't really the appropriate apology or the appropriate takedown of the situation. But you can see the disappointment oozing from his face. But overall,
I tell you what, credit to both of them, though. I thought they handled it brilliantly in that they just carried on. Credit to those two guys, Nels.
Yeah, absolutely. Credit to them. Credit to both of them. Absolutely. But it's a tragic situation. But I do think the BBC should be in 2026, the BBC should recognize and know that how to actually handle these things. And again, too, there's a disparity once again in how in different types of racism and the BBC's sensitivity towards it.
Lastly, the BBC have said, you'll have heard these words before, they're going to order a full investigation into this. What does that need to discover? Where do they need to go with this?
Well, BBC, I wonder how much they spent on full investigations in recent decades. Look, it's going to be a full investigation once again, and I think it will prepare us for the next full investigation. Essentially, BBC is like Sideshow Bob stepping on his rake when it comes to actual racism and black people issues. It just can't seem to walk away from the path and just get things right. No more excuses, no more full investigations, just get things right. You're a professional broadcasting organisation.
Nels Abbey, social commentator, media executive, and wrote Think Like a White Man. Thanks for your input. What is the apology going to people who are offended and not to the two black men who've had the N-word shouted at them? What do we take from that? And, of course, the BBC's reaction. Will take your calls on that. Also coming up after the news, we're off to Mexico. President Claudia Sheinbaum saying...
Today there is more calm and there is government, there are armed forces, there is a security cabinet and there is a lot of coordination.
But the death toll stands at 73 after the capture of notorious cartel leader El Mencho. More on that after this. The 8:15 LVC news headlines read by Dominic Ellis.
Lord Mandelson has been released on bail after his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office. New Zealand has followed Australia in saying it would support removing Andrew Mountbatten Windsor from the line of succession. And Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine is entering a fifth year. LBC weather dry and mild with sunny spells for large parts of England, rain for the west of Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays on the M11 southbound at Junction 7 at Harlow. Traffic is being held. It's following an accident and there are lengthy queues on the approach. Also delays on the M1 southbound to Junction 13 at Bedford. And that's because a car has broken down. Now, these big problems on the trains do continue. Gatwick Express services are suspended. It's because of an ongoing investigation between Gatwick Airport and Purley, which also means there are delays and cancellations for Thameslink and On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Circle, the Metropolitan and Piccadilly lines. But then also on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Hammersmith and City, Bakerloo and Central lines.
This is LBC.
Ah, Benny's parents, thanks for coming.
Hiya.
So, Benny has really blossomed this term.
You're telling me? He outgrew his bike. We sold it on eBay.
Oh, that's not quite what I meant.
It's free to sell on there.
Free to sell?
Easy too. Sold Benny's bike, your guitar, my jacket.
You sold my guitar?
Shall we talk about Benny?
When it's this easy to sell for free, you can't help but say when it's eBay. Things people love. T's and C's apply. Excludes vehicles.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
The Hillary sale ends soon, so get window wise and grab these amazing offers while you still can. Like up to 50% off hundreds of made-to-measure blinds, curtains and shutters. Plus, grab £50 off your electric blind order and conveniently control your blinds for less. And don't forget, with Hillary's, measuring and fitting is always included. So get window wise and book your free in-home appointment today at hillarys.co.uk. But hurry, the Hillary sale ends on the 9th of March. Conditions apply.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Tuesday night on the sofa, watching telly with mum again.
Male hawkers stay with their mothers for life.
This is the moment Stephen chose to speak to Barclays about Mortgage Boost, so he could borrow more with help from family or friends. We're helping first-time buyers get on the property ladder sooner. Search Barclays Mortgages. Barclays, make money work for you.
Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage. Subject to application, financial circumstances and borrowing history. T's and C's apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Let's pick up on what you're saying about that BAFTA coverage. Tess says, I appreciate you talking about the BAFTAs. And as a black man, we're told to get down on our race card. But when we're trying to highlight injustices, if the same scenario happened, where there were anti-Semitic shouts from the crowd, there'd be all hell to pay. It'd be front page of every newspaper. I support you as you're trying to point out what should have happened. Same subject here. Tony in Colchester, I bet you're rubbing your hands with glee. You have another opportunity to bash the BBC. You seem obsessed. Well, it's not. If you want to look, this isn't just me. If you care to pick up any of the newspapers, and I say again, they help set the news agenda. They don't necessarily dictate the entire agenda, but they do help kind of set it. And they are all featuring coverage of this. And there are so many aspects to discuss, not least of which, is why were there no apology to the two people who are the subject of that racist slur? There's an apology for anyone who might be offended by it. And then there's the whole aspect as well of Tourette's syndrome. Has this been an advance? Again, if you suffer from the condition, or someone in your life suffers from the condition, has this actually been advanced? Has this been helpful? Or, in a sense, because of their, I think it's fair to say there's a degree of confusion over this, has it actually taken the whole area backwards? We'll take your calls on that in just a moment, but we have got a line into Mexico, so let's go there now at 20 minutes after 8. At least 73 people have lost their lives, of which 25 are believed to be members of the Mexican National Guard, after Mexico captured and indeed shot the notorious leader of a cartel, the man known as El Mencho, dying after a shootout on Sunday with Mexican security forces. Enough from me. Let's go to Natalia Menezes, who's a freelance journalist, joining us from Guadalajara. Okay, well, let's start with, if we can, the latest this morning. What is the situation there? Good morning.
Hello, Nick. Good morning. Yes, we arrived today to Guadalajara after our flights were cancelled the day of yesterday because of everything that happened around Mencho's death. But today in Guadalajara, the ambience is very, very calm. There is nobody in the streets. There's a few burned cars around and establishments that were also burned with the disturbances that were last night. And the civilian community was asked to please not leave their homes today. So it was basically a ghost town. And we are hoping to see a little bit more movement the day of tomorrow.
Tell us a little bit about the immediate reaction in the aftermath of the shooting, Natalia.
The people's reaction to the shooting is of complete shock. They had no idea the Mexican government was trying to plan such an operation for the day of Sunday. We've been asking around people if they saw any suspicious behavior from the military, but everybody says that this is a complete shock, and they had no idea that there would be such a retaliation from the Cartel of Jalisco towards the people.
What are we hearing from the president?
The president has officially said that this is that they received help from the U.S. government with tipping them off with information of El Mencho, But Shane Bond wanted to make sure that everybody knows that this was a security Mexican-based operation with Mexican military and not to do with the U.S., only in collaboration.
Natalia, I know there's no measure for this, but can you give my listeners here in the United Kingdom an idea of just how strong or how powerful the cartels are?
Yes, historically, even when it comes, like, to, say, to cartels that are like Cartel of Sinaloa, which were ran by Mayo Zambada and Chapo Guzman, which have been captured by the U.S. forces, they notoriously still held, they upheld like a certain moral right of not hindering with civilian lives. Cartel Jalisco came into power just basically ignoring all these rules that had been set for years by all cartels, basically in Mexico, being known as one of the most deadliest cartels with extreme wealth, and Mencho being to this day one of the most important drug traffickers in the history of this continent. And up to now, we are seeing disturbances in 41 states around Mexico City, 250 narco blockages, communications between towns completely cut off, and just people uncertain about what is going to happen. Especially now the question is, does Mexico deserve a World Cup?
Ah, remind me, when is Mexico due to have the World Cup?
It's going to be in like 5 months.
This summer, we got a bit of an issue here, Natalia. This isn't a good look.
Indeed, people are, even the Mexican people, they have today one of the questions that we were asking them, and they told us back, we don't know if we deserve a World Cup because we are constantly looking for people that are missing in the state of Guadalajara, where it's one of the places where the World Cup will be held.
Good Lord. Lastly, we're focusing a lot, of course, on Mexico and Mexicans. What has it done for tourists and tourism, Natalia?
It's quite terrible because in Puerto Vallarta, which has been completely closed off and a very touristic place, the airports are closed. People are advised to stay at the resorts and until further notice. But the problem here is not only been to Puerto Vallarta, but it's been to places like Cancun and Tulum, which are very, very, very touristic areas. And also they have received violence from Cartel Jalisco Nueva Generación.
Really enjoyed the report. Thank you very much for your time this morning. Natalia Menezes is a journalist joining us from Mexico. 8:24. Let's come back to events here in the UK, or events from the weekend, from Sunday night and that BAFTA ceremony. John in commentary, thanks for hanging on the line, John. Where do you want to take the conversation? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. F.
Hello,
I'm being a bit dense here because, I mean, I can go to a record shop and I can buy a record with that word all over it, and it's not. It's not banned. So I don't understand. I mean, I've never had this explained to me clearly, but...
Well, John, you're making a conscious decision to purchase something in an area of music where you know that word would be deployed in, I don't necessarily hold with it, but people would argue, in an artistic sense. These two individuals are merely going up to give an award. I think the first award of the night at the BAFTAs, they happen to be black, so they get the N-word shouted at them. Do you not see a world of difference there, John?
I mean, it could be racist because they're sort of saying...
Well, no, there's no could be. I mean, it is, for me anyway, the most foul or the foulest racial epithet you can think of, bar none.
So if I buy that record and play it full blast and I go through an ethnic minority area, would I be in an error there?
You'd have to ask a police officer. If you were doing it in an intimidatory way or to cause alarm or distress or try and bring about a breach of the peace, yes, you would. It would depend on your motives, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I don't get it.
You don't just coming back to what we saw on Sunday night and indeed the row through yesterday, you don't see any problem with that?
I mean, I can see where they're coming from, but I mean, the guy's got a condition, hasn't he? You know, he's
of course, he's no, of course, and he said he's deeply mortified, and that's why he took himself out of the ceremony, out of the Royal Festival, because he didn't want to cause any more upset. I mean, I think we have to afford enormous sympathy. It all tracks back. None of this need have happened had the BBC been on the ball.
Oh, of course, they had plenty of time to ameliorate it, but I mean, I hear guys calling each other it all the time, you know, but it's in common parlance. But then again, if somebody else says it, it's suddenly a massive issue. I've always found it a bit bizarre, and I'm obviously a dinosaur, because I don't get, well, you know, I'm not a modern person.
Well, just lastly, hopefully the way I've explained it, in that two men go up to give an award and they get that shouted at them, that is unacceptable in anyone's language.
There again, the guy's got a condition, so, I mean, I think he's blowing up out of proportion, but, it's one of those things where I just thought, well, it doesn't follow in a flow to me, you know, it doesn't make sense because...
I hear what you say. Yeah, I mean, we don't agree on this one, but I'm grateful for your input. Have yourself a good day, thank you. And I think the way that the man himself, of course, who was the subject of the film, I Swear, the fact that he says he's deeply mortified by what took place gives you an indication, really, of where we find ourselves. It's 8:27 now. In a few minutes, we're going to have the opportunity, or you're going to have the opportunity, to put your calls and questions to the Education Secretary, just to remind you. So you maybe want to book a call now as we come towards those news headlines and take one more call on the Tourette's story. Eric is in Liverpool. Eric, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. Right. Now, I'm blind, so I sometimes...
Ah, yeah. Haven't spoken to you in a while. I trust you're well. We haven't spoken in a while. Is everything good in your world?
If I get things shouted at me, but there come people without Tourette's. Now, the BBC want to be inclusive, don't they?
Yes.
Now, let's imagine I had a black wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm having a birthday party for myself, and I invite a friend with Tourette's. I have to accept that he may involuntarily shout a racist remark. Now, the BBC have a choice. They either...
Yes.
Be inclusive, or they say, if you've got Tourette's, we can't have you on broadcast to our public.
Yes, but that birthday party for your wife or partner is not going to be witnessed by about 5 million people, is it? And you're not a broadcaster. You don't have a licence to protect as a broadcasting organisation. Sorry, sir?
It would still be insulting to my wife.
Yes.
And, you know, I think the BBC, like you just said, they do have a responsibility, but if they do that, they can't say they're totally inclusive. They have to say, we're inclusive up to a point, but we can't have people with Tourette's because they may shout things which could be broadcast.
Well, let me ask you, had you been the editor, or I don't know whether they have an editor or an executive producer on that show, would you have, I mean, I would have ordered the word cut instantly. That's out. Wouldn't you have done that too?
I would have, providing it was possible to edit it out.
They had 2 hours. You've probably got to cut 3 seconds in total. It's so easy, honestly. It's beginner's work to do that.
I understand that, sir, but the thing is, people can make mistakes, and there's always that chance. I think the editors need to be dragged over the coals, definitely.
Eric, enjoy speaking with you. Look after yourself. It's been a while. Talk again soon. Coming up, Education Secretary Bridget Phillipson will take your calls. And here she is at that school in Peterborough yesterday, unveiling the plans.
High standards and inclusion. It's not one or the other. It is both. From here on, every child will benefit from a broad school experience.
And that's after this. You're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The 8:30 news is with Dominic Ellis.
Peter Mandelson has been released on bail hours after his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office. He's been accused of forwarding sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein while he was business secretary under Gordon Brown. New Zealand's followed Australia in saying it would support removing Andrew Mountbatten Windsor from the line of succession. The former prince was arrested on suspicion of misconduct in public office last week. And the UK has announced a new multi-million pound support package for Ukraine on the 4th anniversary of Russia's invasion. Keir Starmer will lead a virtual meeting of Kyiv's allies later to discuss recent peace talks and further help. LBC weather dry and mild with sunny spells for large parts of England, some rain for the west of Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees.
Hey, smart speaker. Play LBC.
Good morning, I'm Nick Ferrari. It's time to get to your calls.
Hi there, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for taking my call.
I've been working since 14, I've been saving, and I have absolutely no chance of buying my first-time home.
Hear every side of the story.
In April last year, I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. Everyone, from nurses to cleaners and everything, were just lovely.
So I've got 5 years of tuition fees, and it's now £108,000. If it continues at this interest rate, it would eventually reach 200k.
Listen on your radio and on the LBC app.
Having social media, that's why we make. I'm scared for my child all of the time.
LBC.
It genuinely means the world to be heard.
Leading Britain's conversation.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Check your retirement savings are on track with PensionBee's easy-to-use app. Because when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Sunlight's guaranteed over 50 plan gave confidence to Jane and Chris. With their insurance sorted, they're becoming naturists. Cutting loose in their birthday suits, feeling elegant and free. But when they answered the door, the postman saw more than he expected to see. Sunlight, a little confidence goes a long way. Affordable cover with a cash payout. Search Sunlight Cover today.
Premiums paid could exceed the payout. Full cover after 1 year. Ages 49 to 85.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's come out, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
It's the last chance to get yourself a ticket for Wednesday's Lotto draw.
It could be you.
Lotto, from the National Lottery. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:33, it's been hailed as the biggest change in education for a generation to make schools more inclusive, 60,000 new SEND places, and to power our education system into another decade. Bridget Phillipson, the Education Secretary, Minister for Women and Equalities, who of course brought all those measures in. Good to see you here in our Westminster studio. Thank you for coming here. And let's get straight to the calls. Sarah is in Basingstoke. Sarah, you're through to Bridget Phillipson. Go ahead. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling because I have a three-year-old son who's non-verbal and autistic, and he has an EHCP. And I'm particularly worried about the reviews you announced yesterday. It implied that children will face regular reviews of their needs carried out by teachers, often without the legal protection of an EHCP. And this creates huge uncertainty for parents over their child's future. First, can you guarantee no child's EHCP will be taken away? And second, can you provide details of what safeguards will be in place to ensure these reviews are carried out fairly? Because there's an obvious conflict of interest that exists when teachers are the ones assessing needs, knowing full well any recommendations they make will directly increase their workload.
Sarah, hang on the line. Bridget Phillipson.
OK, thanks very much. Good to be with you, and thanks, Sarah, for your question. There's quite a lot in it, so I'll try and respond to each element in turn. So I completely recognise how the system hasn't been working for too many families at the moment, but I think it's important to stress that we want to get this transition right from where we are to where we need to be. So we're investing up front to do that. The current system, in terms of the ability of people to apply for education, health and care plans, will continue until 2030 is when that will start to change. But we're not going to wait for that to start investing in more support. So I announced yesterday £4 billion of support that will go into schools, but that will go into specialist support in areas like speech and language.
Yep.
The transition that is talked about is that when we get to 2930, ahead of the new system coming in 2030, children who are going to make that shift from primary into secondary will be reviewed against the new system. Annual review should take place already for children who have EHCPs. That doesn't always happen, but that is what should happen. But that is a number of years down the line where we will have invested significantly to transform the system so it's one that is unrecognisable from what parents see now and a very different system into the future. And there will be a shift from that system, I think, that parents recognise isn't working, to a much better and stronger system. But I have heard from parents like Sarah, like you, the importance of making sure there is clear accountability, the ability to put things right when parents are questioning decisions and want to challenge that. And we, you know, I would encourage parents to have a look at the consultation that we launched yesterday. It is a consultation, and we want to continue that conversation and make sure that people respond.
So there will be a tribunal?
Yes.
Okay. I note that in relevance to what Sarah's been asking, you were on the news last night and Sarah Corker from ITV News asked you twice, can you give the guarantee no child who is getting support will lose it? You seemed unable to answer it. Can you now give me that guarantee? No child who is currently getting support will lose that support.
So that's the transition point about primary to secondary that was being asked about.
So you can't give me that guarantee, can you?
I will absolutely answer your question,
Derek. Okay, go ahead.
We will make sure that children's needs are reviewed and that the right support is put in place. So all children will have an individual support plan, all children with special educational needs. That will mean more children than right now who the only way to get that support is through an education, health and care plan. Where we make that transition from primary to secondary, so that's children who are currently in year two, who in 2029-30 will be starting that transition process to secondary school. Of the children right now who currently have an education, health and care plan, we estimate that 1 in 8 will move on to an individual support plan rather than being in the EHCP process. But that is the result.
What happened to the other 7?
They will get an individual. They will retain their EHCP.
I see. So there will be some children who move to, or 1 in 8 will go to the ISP.
That's our best estimate. But I should just say this is not a number we're chasing. There's not a target. There is no. We're not seeking to reduce the numbers. Mm-hmm. We are trying to deliver a system that provides better and more timely support for children.
And so, again, the guarantee, no child who is getting support will lose it. You can guarantee that.
I can, because they will get support under the new system, that will involve individual support plans and that will see schools better able to deliver targeted support, but they will get a plan that is backed up with legally underpinned rights associated with that.
Let's get a quick response from Sarah. Do you want to come back to the Education Secretary, Sarah?
I would just say that individual support plans are decided, I believe, by teachers. And so what you're doing is pitting parents against teachers without that legal backup of an independent EHCP process.
Response from you, if you would, Secretary of State.
So I do, of course, recognise the value of education, health and care plans. That's why we've said that they will remain within the current system. And there does need to be rights of redress for parents when things don't work well. But individual support plans, there will be routes for parents to seek resolution where they disagree. And for example, where parents are unhappy with the outcome, where they've complained about that, the complaint will be dealt with in part by an independent person on that panel who is a SEND expert that will be able to look at that too. And there will be then the route for parents to take that further beyond that.
Sarah, good luck with your son. I note, Secretary of State, that the assistance will only be provided for children with the most complex needs. Can you define most complex?
So what we published yesterday alongside the consultation was the shape of the profiles around specialist provision packages. So they will be nationally defined. We will have experts, both health and education experts, will work with us to define what that provision should look like. And there will be national standards. So part of what parents will see at the moment when they go through this system is that there is huge variation depending on where you live. And we will put in place nationally defined standards and specialist provision packages that will respond to the needs of children who have complex challenges.
My earlier caller's son, who's non-verbal autistic, does that class as most complex?
It's hard to comment on an individual. I'll do my best to answer that question. It will not be based on diagnosis. It will be based on need. So autistic children can have a range of need. And sometimes it can overlap with other areas for other disabilities.
So non-verbal autistic is not complex?
No, it is. I'm just saying I can't, I don't unfortunately know the full details of service 3-year-old. But what I would say is to look at we published yesterday a list of what those draft profiles would look like. We're going to consult further on that. We will bring forward, through the work of an expert panel, nationally defined standards that will set out the shape of that. I want to make sure that the needs of children, where those needs are particularly complex, are met more quickly, but met more consistently.
But surely any child who's non-verbal is complex, Secretary of State.
There is a complexity there.
What does that mean? I mean, would you agree, if a child is non-verbal, that's complex?
Some children can take longer to learn to speak, and many children experience speech and language difficulties. That is one of the biggest growth areas that we've seen. But often, if the right support is put in place quickly, then children can make progress. For the children who don't make progress, and where they have profound and complex need. Look, my intention behind all of this is to make it easier for people like Sarah to get the support that their children need. But there is too much variation. It might be one thing in Basingstoke, it could be another thing in Birmingham.
Yes, I
understand. And a more national approach, where we have the best evidenced approach as well about what works to support children who are facing those kinds of challenges. Again, there is huge variation in the approach that teachers and health staff will take.
But if you feel this so keenly, why is it taking so many years to actually put in place? And figure of EHCPs will rise until 2930, then by 2035, fewer children. I mean, this is 4 or 5 years away, Secretary of State. Why the delay?
Well, the balance here is that at one level, we've obviously got lots of parents like Sarah who are worried about the change that we are seeking to bring. So we need to manage this carefully and properly. But we're investing up front so that by the time we get towards 2030...
But we've won a world war by the time this will actually take effect.
Sadly, it does take time to make change of this scale happen.
To fight a world war to change this, turn this around, Secretary of State? Are you seriously telling my listeners it takes that long? 2035, that's 9 years.
Well, no, the change starts from
2035 is when the numbers start to come down, is what I'm reading.
Yes, I mean, I would hope that the numbers would come down more quickly because of the investment we're putting in into early family support. But I'm not chasing a number. This is not about cost cutting. This is not about reducing the numbers in an arbitrary and unfair way. We are going to see the numbers continue to increase. That's what we anticipate will happen. But that's because the system we've got at the moment means that in order for parents to get support, they have to get that EHCP. We need to change the system so that we support families and children more quickly without the need for that fight.
Yours is an all-encompassing brief as Education Secretary. I think we're going to the other end of the age scale now. James in Colchester. We're going to talk about university, I understand. James, you're on the radio. Your question. Good morning.
Thanks for having me on.
Yes, James.
So I borrowed £45,000 on a Plan 2 loan and graduated in 2018. I now owe over £69,000. In the last year, I paid back £3,700, but £5,000 was added in interest. So even though I'm paying off my debt, it's still growing. If that trend continues, I'll repay almost double what I borrowed over the next 22 years and still never clear the balance. Does the Education Secretary accept that this is fundamentally unfair, and will she commit to ending the punishing RPI plus 3% interest rate and reviewing the frozen repayment thresholds?
And I have to say, James, you're one of around 5.8 million people who took out these Plan 2, as they're called, loans. Secretary of State, can you give that guarantee?
So we are going to continue to look at this. I do recognise what James has set out. I would just add, in addition to what he'd said, that at the end of 30 years, that will be written off in full. So those who have taken on Plan 2 loans... It gets written off at the end of that,
respectfully, so you and I and every taxpayer pays it.
Yeah. So that is part
That's not good either, is it?
Well, this is part of the problem with the system.
Well, surely the problem is this young man took a £42,000. He's now at 69. I mean, he can't even cover the interest. I appreciate you didn't bring this in, but, I mean, for instance, why not go to CPI? Can you give us that pledge now?
No, I can't. I mean,
why?
I will answer that. As you say, we didn't bring this system in. It operated from 2012 to 2023. The part of the challenge with reforming the student finance system is that whilst it can often seem superficially attractive to do things like changing the interest rate, it doesn't always have the desired effect in terms of making the system fairer, particularly for less well-off students. It's a really complex system. It's, you know, evolved over time. It's not a system that I would have put in place, but we are where we are. We are going to look at if there's anything that we can do on this. Of course, we keep it open and under review. We've increased the threshold for repayment this year. It's then frozen in subsequent years. But I do recognise the pressure that many people who
wouldn't it be
went
a great
to university
indication
during this
of
period are still facing.
To talk later today, later this week, with the Prime Minister and the Chancellor to say, look, come on, we've got to move from RPI to CPI, just as a gesture of where we want to go. Why can't we move to that?
Well, that will happen over time anyway, because everything is moving towards a measure of CPI. But the challenge with this is that the way the interest rate operates means that those who earn more pay back more. So higher earners in this system repay more because they've had the benefit of university education and are earning more. So there can sometimes be unintended consequences. I know, but there are sometimes unintended consequences of making some of those changes that don't necessarily make it
fairer. You're aware of the level of anger this is causing?
Yes, I am.
You are. All right. Okay. James, good luck. Thank you. We're staying with a related question. I think Joel is in Egham. Joel, you're on the radio. Hello. Yours is a slightly different take on university tuition. Go ahead.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good. Your question to Bridget Phillipson.
My question is, what policies are we going to bring in to help graduates like me? Because I've been a graduate for just under 2 years now. I graduated in 24 summer. Mm-hmm. I'm in 49.
What did you study, Joel?
I did marketing.
Marketing. What did you hope to get? What kind of job did you want?
So I wanted to go into assistant and then hopefully get into managing and then consulting is the...
I want to talk the jobless side, but just out of interest, are you in debt?
Yes, 49,000.
And that grows each year, does it?
It does. So I was looking at it last night and I've made £1,600 worth of payments towards my...
Debt. Yep.
Mm-hmm. But it has gone up by close to 4,000.
Okay. Let's stay, if we may. And I'm sorry to hear that, Joel, but I want to get the Secretary of State for Education. You'll be aware we're talking vacancies for university leavers fell 45% in January compared with a year earlier. Why aren't these kids and folk getting jobs?
A part of it, my kind of best estimation of some of this, is we are seeing some quite big shifts in the labour market, particularly in response to areas like technology and use of AI, and that is changing behaviours of some of the big kind of graduate recruiters in terms of the people they need and where they need them. I do think that is a part of it. And, you know, Joel's question about what we're going to do to help people in his position, there are a number of things. So, you know, we're freezing rail fares to make it easier for commuters so that they're not...
Well, how's it helping if he hasn't got a job? He hasn't got anywhere to go.
You have to travel to interviews most of the time these days, but I hope that Joel is successful in getting a good job soon. We also want to make it easier for young people to get on the housing ladder, building more homes, investing more also in social and affordable housing.
Ladder, Bridget,
investing in social and affordable housing.
He's got another £3,400 in debt over the year. How can he possibly take on a mortgage?
Well, I really hope that Joel is successful in his job hunt and when he's able to do...
But there are jobs. Vacancies for university leavers fell 45%.
Yeah, so I really hope that Joel is successful in getting that job. And when he does, I hope he is able to see the benefit of having a more stable economy where interest rates are coming down. And that means that people's mortgages will also come down. And it is cheaper to get a mortgage.
Secretary of State,
we're building more homes and more social and affordable homes too.
700,000 graduates are claiming benefits. Should everyone go to university?
No, I don't think everybody should go to university.
Shouldn't we be encouraging people not to go to university, possibly take up a trade? What can we do in that skills area?
So we are massively expanding what we're doing around apprenticeships for young people, also other routes into high-quality technical and vocational education. That's absolutely essential. I don't think it's one or the other. For me, it's about young people having good options, good pathways, the choices that are right for them.
Well, they'll be doing their revision for their A-levels soon, won't it, with Easter around the corner. How does a young person determine whether they should go to university or whether they should go into a college and be a tradesman or tradeswoman, an engineer, a plumber, a hairdresser? How do they determine that?
It's a big choice. It is a big choice. They will do that through speaking to their parents, speaking to their college or school.
Well, who would want to get into debt? Who would want to get £60,000 worth of debt with no job like
because graduates,
poor Joel?
Graduates still go on to earn more across their lifetime. So going to university is an investment in your future. I don't think it's the only route for young people. We've had a real focus on expanding technical and vocational education. But I would just say that sometimes what I hear, particularly from opposition politicians, is that they want to deny to young people the chance to go to university when they themselves have been able to benefit from that. I think it's about, for me, it's about genuine choice and also not assuming that just because you're from a certain community or a certain background or from a certain family, that that should determine what you go on to do. And high quality careers guidance and work experience is part of how we allow young people to really consider the options that are out there for them.
Let's go. Good luck, Joel, with your job hunting. Dan in Great Yarmouth, you're through to Bridget Phillipson. Go ahead, Dan. Morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on. We're a mainstream primary school in Great Yarmouth. And we have our own complex needs provision on site. We have 45 out of 450 children with EHCPs. And we have a learning cognition and an SEMH provision on site. And we haven't had permanent exclusion since 2015. But we do issue suspensions when we've exhausted all possibilities, and we do our very best to hold on to all of our children. Mm-hmm. Speaking of achieving and thriving, we're seeing quite early on that some children would benefit from a vocational pathway rather than academic. What actions are being taken to protect the well-being of teachers but also reduce exclusions and keep children in education?
Thanks so much, Dan. And what you've set out in terms of the work that you're doing is exactly the kind of approach we want to see in more schools across the country. So more specialist provision within mainstream schools, but so that children who have those additional needs get a more tailored and more targeted approach, including through changes to the curriculum. And I hope, Dan, if you can if you haven't had the time already, just to take a look at what we've published yesterday and the intention behind all of that. I do understand the workload and wellbeing pressures that many of our staff are facing. It's why, you know, we are investing more in our schools. But I know that lots of the pressures that staff face, those problems have already started to develop before children arrive in school. And the action we're taking on child poverty, on homelessness, on early family support services are all about really equipping children to succeed when they arrive at school and taking away some of that pressure from staff who all too often have had to step in and take on social work style roles when what they came into the profession to do was to focus on teaching quality. And I do recognise the point about a range of options for young people, strong vocational and academic options. That's, we've already set out quite a lot in this area. We had a big curriculum and assessment review. We're going to bring forward a new national curriculum. And we're also bringing in new qualifications for young people on the vocational side, as well as the T levels, which are, you know, for post-16 are working really well.
Dan, good luck with what you're doing. Let's turn to some other questions. In the Times today, they've looked at the provision of private equity-backed independent special schools. They've spoken with Kieran Gill, who's founder of an organisation called The Difference. I note these schools charge an average of £63,000 per child per year, and many, reports the paper, are backed by private equity. How comfortable or otherwise are you with that?
Deeply uncomfortable, because we are spending money that should be meant for education on profit. And
what is the state cost? I read it's more like 20-something
thousand. It's about 26,000.
Yeah. 63. So they're making money.
It's more than double. They are. They're making a lot of money.
Well, can't you legislate against
it? We're going to do that.
How?
So we are going to bring in price bans, where councils will be able to set bans for provision and private providers will have to adapt to that. Now, I should say, For all the quality sometimes is variable in some of the sector you're talking about, there is some fantastic specialist provision out there, including in the independent sector, often run by charities or others that do a brilliant job. So we want to guard against any unintended consequence there, but we will put in place price bans so that there is more clarity and transparency around what councils are being asked to cover the cost of. And also investing more so that we've got more places closer to home for children so they don't have to travel. They often travel long distances to go to some of this provision. And that's what also costs money around transport. But even if you set aside the cost, it means that on an evening or a weekend when a child comes back in that hour-long taxi ride,
yes,
they don't have friends in their local community and they often feel quite isolated.
OK, let's go to another call. We've got another 5 or so minutes with you, maybe 6. Joe in Wandsworth. Joe, you're through to the Secretary of State. Go ahead, Joe. Morning.
Yes, hello. Good morning. Good morning, Secretary of State.
Hello, Joe.
Hi. I understand that the pronouns guidance for primary schools is being reviewed and possibly expanded. Whilst you are giving £4 billion towards SEND pupils, I don't think that this comes under that. And I just wondered, you know, when are teachers going to be allowed to teach children the core educational subjects and let medical professionals do what they do and let teachers do what they do? As you just sort of referred to, teaching quality is all important. And it seems that a teacher's remit is just being widened and widened and widened. The scope of what they have to do is okay. Just so broad now. They, you know, how are they to focus
on what they have to do as teaching?
Yes.
Joe, let's hear from the Joe, hold your fire there, Secretary of State.
I agree with that. I want teachers to focus on what matters most, which is raising standards, supporting children and delivering a brilliant education. I think Joe was asking about guidance around gender questioning children. I think
because there was that guidance that came out earlier.
So we have already published our Keeping Children Safe in Education statutory guidance, and there is a section within that that provides clarity to schools on how they should support children who are questioning their gender. It addresses the issue that that Joe has just raised there as well.
Can a five-year-old go to school and decide that he wants to be called by a girl's name and that he is a she? Are you comfortable with that?
We've been clear that in primary schools we need to tread with a lot of care.
I didn't actually answer the question, Secretary. Are you comfortable with that?
Well, this was usually where it involves a parent's decision to support their child in that way. So part of the balance here is that, of course, often parents will be supporting.
But the child could just tip up at school, couldn't he or she? Does everyone know at five whether they want to be a man or a woman?
Well, that's part of what actually Hilary Cass said in her review, that in allowing children just to consider who they are, to behave in, you know, ways that might not be aligned with their sex or their gender. Mm-hmm. So if a boy wants to wear dresses, we should just, if we allow that to work, you know, children will experiment at different points. Mm-hmm. They will consider who they are. That just taking a watchful approach, not coming down too hard on that, actually reduces what we see in terms of children moving towards a more medicalised model. And, you know, the guidance that we've published, Dr. Hilary Cass has welcomed. She thinks it's the right approach in supporting children and their well-being. And I think it would be exceptionally rare for primary schools to be operating that. But I've also been clear that in anything in that space, unless there are very strong safeguarding reasons where a child is at risk of harm, parents should be involved in those important decisions.
Let's take a couple from the emails. Dan in Kent says, is the Secretary of State supportive of the NEU, National Education Union, suggesting teachers should have a four-day week? Secretary of State.
I'm not, and if that means, I'm not quite sure what they're arguing for.
Well, I think the NEU said that one day should be at home, like lesson preparation and planning.
So schools will need to operate on a five-day week basis. That is important. Of course, schools themselves will often operate different models that will allow for teachers to work reduced hours or different numbers of days. That's pretty routine, particularly if you're supporting, I don't know, if a woman is returning to work, yes, having had a baby and being on maternity leave.
A teacher can't do a four-day week, can they?
Sometimes what schools will do, if you're, for example, a maths teacher, you might be able to work 4 days because you're working pretty intensively in those 4 days. That's not that you then have a week working from home, but sometimes people will have different patterns of
work. Where do you spend the fifth day then if you're not at home?
Well, you often won't be paid for that other day if you're only committing to working a certain number of days or a certain number of hours.
So you, okay, all right, let's get to another call. Paul is in Croydon. I think your wife is your wife's a head teacher. What's your question to Bridget Phillipson? Paul.
Yeah, good morning. So it's regarding, I read in the document yesterday, attendance. You want to focus on getting more kids back in school. Now, mm-hmm. The problem is, my wife's got, in her school, she's got about 45% parents that are on free school dinners and, you know, get support and stuff, which is much higher than national average. And what happens is, in terms of school holiday times, they obviously take their kids out of school to go on holiday those few days early to get cheaper prices.
Yes.
Now, she gets hammered by that by us, Ofsted, because it obviously affects the attendance figures.
Yep.
But what does the Secretary of State plan to do with that, to deal with these holiday companies that do that? Or is that going to get taken into consideration?
Well, of course, there is the fining system. Paul, thank you. Let's put that, because we've only got 2 minutes left with the Secretary of State. There is the fining system, but as you will be aware, sadly, parents, can pay the fine and still be quids in.
Look, in a free economy, there's a limit to what you can do around how companies operate pricing and charging models. But, you know, I do think parents have a responsibility to be sending their children to school during term time and not taking term time holidays. We have put much more support, however, into supporting children around attendance where they're facing challenges around mental health or other pressures that families might be facing. But what we have seen around different schools is that even where you've got some schools with a similar kind of intake operating in a similar community, there can be differences in terms of the outcomes they get on attendance. So we're encouraging schools to work together to use some of the data we're giving them to understand where there might be pressures on attendance and practical things that they can do. But I do recognise that lots and lots of schools face this issue around term time holidays.
All right, we've got a minute or so because I know you have to go to Cabinet. You will recall during the general election, you and I had interesting conversations about the decisions regards VAT on private school fees, and you said that there would be 6,500 new teachers by the end of this Parliament. How is recruitment going? What number are we at now, Secretary of State?
So it's around 2,300 more teachers in secondary and specialist provision and post-16. I say that because we aren't seeking to recruit so many in primary, because with the falling birth rate we don't need as many primary teachers. We're making good progress on that number around recruiting more teachers, particularly in areas like maths and science. We've seen big increases in people going into initial teacher training. But we're also doing a better job at retaining teachers. The numbers published most recently show the biggest kind of retention figure in terms of teachers that we've seen since around 2010. So it's working well. We've made progress. But yesterday we published our plan to deliver that 6.5. So you can go and take a look and tell me what you think.
You won't be aware of this, but LBC has covered early this morning more than 50 teachers are on strike in Gloucestershire over pupil violence. This is at the Tewkesbury Academy. Staff are saying they feel unsafe in their classrooms. There was a stabbing there in 2023. What will you do to get these teachers off the picket line and to assure staff, members of staff, whether they're school staff, administration staff, for their own individual safety, Secretary of State?
Yeah, absolutely. Every teacher, every member of staff should be safe at school and free from violence. And it is right that head teachers take action to protect their staff in those situations. situations and use the powers that are available to them. I don't know the specifics of what's happened in this school. Yeah, and obviously the school as the employer or the trust as the employer, I don't know in this case, perhaps the local authority has a responsibility to manage that. I would hope that they can resolve this to the satisfaction of the staff, make sure they're safe and get the strike resolved. All
right. When are we going to see the Mandelson files? You are, of course, also Minister for Women and Equalities. When will we see those?
Well, we hope to be able to publish the first tranche of documents in the start of March. That's the commitment that we've given.
Why the delay?
We need to tread with care around the police investigation, that nothing we publish could compromise the work that they now have underway. There's a live police investigation. We do want there to be transparency. We do intend to publish documents. But
so we'll get them next week?
I think the commitment was around the start of March. I imagine, given events in recent days, we will need to check with the police that nothing we intend to publish would compromise their investigation.
And just lastly, without compromising any investigation or, of course, implying any guilt to Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor or Peter Mandelson, how important it is, again, without implying guilt, if there are allegations of sex trafficking or this behaviour, as Minister for Women Equalities, we find out everything and the necessary action is taken. Bridget Phillipson.
Yeah, no one's above the law. And, these are potential crimes of the utmost seriousness, of the most horrific nature, and His Majesty the King has said that no one is above the law and supports the police investigation that's taking place at the moment.
Really appreciate your time today. I understand you're an incredibly busy person, and on behalf of everyone who's got children or grandchildren, I hope these reforms work. Thank you, Bridget Phillipson.
Thank you.
Appearing here on LBC at 9 o'clock, just after 9, news is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, Peter Mandelson has been released on bail hours after his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office. He's been accused of forwarding sensitive information to Jeffrey Epstein while he was business secretary. Lord Mandelson has always denied any wrongdoing. LBC's reporter Fraser Knight is following developments.
Peter Mandelson was pictured leaving Wandsworth Police Station at around 1:15 this morning in the back of a car. It was some 8 hours after he'd been led out of his home in North London by officers and taken in for questioning under arrest. Police say he's been released on bail while their investigation continues.
New Zealand has followed Australia in saying it would support removing Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor from the line of succession. Any such proposal would need the backing of Commonwealth countries. The former prince denies wrongdoing over his links to Jeffrey Epstein. The Education Secretary has told LBC that she can guarantee no child will lose support as part of overhauls to the special educational needs system in England. £4 billion proposals outlined yesterday include changes to children's education, health and care plans. By 2035, the support packages will be reserved only for children with the most complex needs. But speaking on LBC's Call the Cabinet, Bridget Phillipson insisted to Nick that those that need help will continue to get it.
Of the children right now who currently have an education, health and care plan, we estimate that 1 in 8 will move on to an individual support plan rather than being in the EHCP process. We're not seeking to reduce the numbers. Mm-hmm. We are trying to deliver a system that provides better and more timely support for children.
So again, the guarantee, no child who is getting support will lose it. You can guarantee that.
I can, because they will get support under the new system, that will involve individual support plans.
Separately, Bridget Phillipson's told LBC that she will continue to look at the student loan system. There's continued concerns about the amount of debt levels that are building for graduates. Ministers have previously said the threshold for repayments will be unfrozen in the next few years. Britain has announced new sanctions against Russia, the largest since the start of the invasion of Ukraine 4 years ago today. They're aimed at squeezing the country's oil and gas industry to limit funds for the war. And in a medical first in the UK, a baby has been born to a mother who received a womb from a donor who died. Grace Bell had a transplant in 2024 after she was born without a womb because of a rare condition. She gave birth to Hugo at a hospital in West London in December. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 26 at 10,657. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry and mild with sunny spells for large parts of England. Some rain for the west of Scotland and Northern Ireland with a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
British Gas have this thing. We call it home care. We'll fix all sorts and it's unlimited repairs. Expert engineers will solve the upset of boilers not boiling or taps that won't wet. Electrics playing tricks or a pipe that's broke. We're there for everyone. even blue furry folk. Your home won't feel booby-trapped. It'll feel just like new. British Gas, taking care of things and looking after you. T's and C's apply. Excess options available per repair.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call and WhatsApp message now 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Good morning, you. 6 minutes after nine, Tuesday, February the 24th, and we've just finished another Call the Cabinet exclusively here on LBC. And in the Westminster studio with me, my political, LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, who watched and monitored it through. Let's start with, obviously, what the Secretary of State, although we covered other areas, what more have we learnt about SEND, and perhaps down to the numbers and what it actually means? And there are many, many out there, Natasha, concerned mums and dads and grandparents. Morning again.
Yes, good morning. And you heard from some of those callers just about those concerns, and especially from the very first caller who was talking about potentially losing their ECHP for their child. However, Bridget Phillipson did tell you, yes, that support will continue for the kids that are going through the system.
That's so important for
folks. It is important for them to hear, and she was very clear on that, that they will get that support going through the system if they've got an ECHP or have similar needs. They're not going to get that support taken away. And clearly, there was a point where last year she was unable to confirm that, and today, being very clear with our listeners, that they will not be losing their support. I also thought she was very strong as well on student loans. Of course, LBC's been talking about this issue for a while now. She says we're going to continue to look at this. She says I'm aware of the level of
it
anger.
It was just words, though, Natasha, wasn't it, really? I mean, the CPI, RPI, that would be such an indication. Wouldn't it be an indication?
It would. And look, I think it's fair to say that she can't make policy live on air, and I don't think that anybody expected her to. But I am told, Nick, that within the government, they are looking at what options might be the best. They're doing a scoping exercise to look at all the options, RPI, CPI, the repayment threshold, the interest rate that people are charged. So that work, I'm told, is going on in the department right now, and Bridget Phillipson is looking at what more can be done. So I don't think we've heard the end of the line on this. And like I say, she does understand the anger, not just from her constituents, but from the parents of those constituents who are forced to pay out so much money for those loans.
One other area you want to go before you have to go, because I know you're on assignment later. So what's the other area you want to cover?
Yeah, so obviously Equalities Minister as well, as part of her brief, thought she was very interesting. Her final questions about sort of guidance for kids in school. She has basically backed the advice of Hilary Cass in that government review. Yep. And the quote was, if a boy does want to wear dresses at school, we're not going to come down very hard on that. So that is the opinion of the government. That's the opinion of these experts, is that we shouldn't be making a big deal of this, in the same way that we don't make a big deal if a girl decides to wear trousers and sort of dress like a tomboy. Mm. We shouldn't be doing the same thing on the other side. But I think some parents will have something to say about that, Nick.
OK, you're on assignment. You go. Thanks. Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, reporting. Let's bring to the conversation Gaz Hitchin. Now, Gaz is the co-presenter of the Autism Dadcast. He is a father to a child with autism, and he appears regularly on this show to discuss matters such as these. Good to have you on again, Gaz. All is well. Your child is well. What did you learn from the last half an hour? Morning.
Not a lot, if I'm honest with you, Nick. And there's a few gaps. Actually, do you know what? The first thing I want to say, I think I don't want to say this at the front because there's going to be a lot of worried parents out there. You know this as well as I do. Mm. Nothing actually changes today. No. This is essentially, this white paper is a proposal. All legislation is still in place. Children and Families Act 2014 is still in full force. So nothing changes.
Indeed, if your child is 4 or 5 and above, it won't affect them anyway by the time implementation comes through. It's also worth saying that.
Yeah, absolutely worth saying that. But what I've found is I've been asking the wrong question around this kind of legal right to appeal thing. I've been asking if there's going to be an enforceable legal right, and the government keeps saying yes. What I should have been asking, and I think a lot of people potentially should have been asking, is about the tribunal specifically.
Right.
Now, we've just heard her say that, yes, tribunals still exist, but what's really important is in this white paper and some of the press releases, there's actually 4 tiers that our children are going to be going into depending on their need.
Right.
Now, the tribunals, as far as I can tell, are only going to exist for the highest tier, which is the specialist tier, which is where those complex needs come in that you just asked about.
Yes.
Tribunals only exist in that tier where they've already got EHCPs.
Yes.
Now, currently, you can go to tribunal if there's a refusal to access, if refused to issue an EHCP in the first place or wrong information in the plan. There's a plethora of reasons you could go to tribunal at the moment. All of those, as far as I can tell, are going to be gone.
What will that impact be?
Massive. I mean, that's probably the vast majority of reasons people go to tribunal. And a really important point here as well is currently 98% of people that end up having to go to tribunal, which is a really long process, 98% of them win. And this is something else that came up yesterday, is, and she said it twice and she said it again this morning, that this isn't about cost cutting. I'm sorry. If this isn't about cost cutting, why are we doing it? We're an emotional bunch, send parents, but we're also pretty pragmatic. This is about cost cutting. We understand that. None of us want our council, our local authorities to go bankrupt, but this is about cost cutting.
Gaz, what did you take from when I tried to get more detail on exactly what constitutes complex? Gaz?
Yeah, that is probably actually surprising to me. We put it out there to our community and we said, like, listen, you guys have had a look at the white paper. What is the biggest question you want asking? And it surprised me that the biggest question that came back was exactly that. What constitutes complex?
But they don't know, Gaz. She doesn't know yet. I put it to you. She doesn't know.
Yeah, and neither do I now. I mean, I thought I did. I assumed that my son, who's in a specialist setting, he's going to be 7 in July. He's nonverbal. He's in nappies still. I assumed he'd be complex.
Yeah.
As far as Ms. Phillipson's concerned, that might not be the case because they're all going to be treated on an individual basis.
They would be the first, the government would be the first to say, look, this is a consultation, it is a white paper. What do you think needs to happen next, particularly for folks such as yourself as a send dad or a send parent?
Well, this consultation period, we need to get heard. Again, we need to be pragmatic. You know, there is a lot of money being misspent, whether that be private specialist settings, which, I mean, I know of one which is in excess of £100,000 a year. On top of that, we're still paying private taxi firms to, you know, shuttle these kids. And I know of one case where it's over £100 a day per child that this taxi firm is charging. It's extortionate. So we need to be pragmatic. We need to sort out the spending. There is too much, but we also need to make sure our kids and parents don't lose the rights they've currently got.
Lastly, I understand you were going to attend the presentation in Peterborough yesterday. Is that correct? Did you go along?
What did you
take from the mood in the room? What did you take from the Secretary of State's presentation? And I hate to use the word performance, but how she performed?
I wasn't overly impressed, if I'm totally honest. I think we were hoping to hear a lot more about the contents of the white paper, but all we heard about is how much money is being invested. And we heard some anecdotes of, you know, people she's met. I'm not really interested in a few anecdotes. I just want to know the facts of what's happening. Yes, they're putting a lot of money in, but let's be honest, they're putting a lot of money in up front in the hope that they save a lot of money further down the line, which I understand. That's fine.
Gaz, be well. Thanks for your time. Gaz Hitchin, co-presenter of the Autism Dadcast, father to that son. Let's get your calls on. Jane's in South London. Jane, what do you take from my conversation with Bridget Phillipson? Good morning.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the radio. Go ahead, Jane.
It's Jane, not James.
I did say Jane. Or if I didn't, I apologise. Did I say James? I do apologise.
It sounded like.
Jane.
It's okay.
Jane.
My question is, or something that I really wanted to highlight, I actually welcome the changes. I've been in SEND for 26 years. The current EHCPs, there's a section called Section F, and that section sets out what the school needs to provide for our children.
Right.
And some of what is written on Section F is something that absolutely no school, while you're running a school with however many children that you can actually provide, it needed major reviews. So what the Secretary of State is setting out to the individual school plans, I welcome them, because then it means that the school will have a say on what they can provide. I know there will be speech and language therapists, there will be physiotherapists, you name it, all the multidisciplinary teams that are going to support in the core production of this.
Do you see this as a total win?
It is a total win. If you understand SEND very well, parents will call in. Of course, they come from, you know, they have...
Well, they're worried. Mums and dads are worried. You've got to understand
them.
They are,
and understandably so. And getting an EHCP is almost impossible with some of our children.
I will leave it there, Jane, thank you very much for your call. More calls coming in on this, hardly surprising, after another call to Cabinet here on LBC. Also coming up after the news, the Nottingham killer, Valdo Calicane, took the lives of two students and a soon-to-be-retired school caretaker. Was not sectioned after a previous violent attack because he was black, an inquiry was told. We'll look at that in more detail. It's just on 9:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Peter Mandelson has been released on bail hours after his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office. The Education Secretary has told LBC's Call the Cabinet that she can guarantee no child will lose support as part of plans to overhaul the special educational needs system. And Britain has announced new sanctions against Russia, the largest since the start of the invasion of Ukraine 4 years ago today. LBC weather dry and mild with sunny spells for large parts of England, some rain for the west of Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Today's on the M25, anti-clockwise to Junction 1B at Dartford. It's following an accident and two of the four lanes are closed. Still very busy on the M11 southbound at Junction 7 at Harlow, and that was after an accident that happened earlier. There are restrictions on Borough High Street southbound at Southwark Street, and that's following an accident. On the trains, no Gatwick Express services running because of an ongoing investigation between Gatwick Airport and Purley, and then there are delays and cancellations across the Thames Link and Southern networks. On the Underground, there are severe delays on the Circle, Hammersmith and City, Metropolitan and Piccadilly lines, and also minor delays on the Bakerloo and Central.
LBC.
When you're smiling,
don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling, and the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Tonight's Euro Millions jackpot is £124 million.
I think that deserves a whoop whoop. Thank you, faraway person. Get in tonight's Euro Millions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
If you have an M&S online account or a Sparks card, your data may have been exposed in a recent cyber attack. Last year, M&S confirmed a data breach affecting customer information, including personal data. If you've ever shopped online at M&S or used Sparks, you could be entitled to compensation through a group action claim. Check your eligibility today at jointheclaim.com. It's quick, secure, and easy to do online at jointheclaim.com.
At ulisprosperity.com, you buy the car and we pay you up to £600 per month in rental income. For conditions, visit ulisprosperity.com.
This is 40-year-old Kathy, mother of two and self-confessed telly addict.
Ready? Oh, look at you. That's brilliant. Well done.
This is also Kathy, working as part of a team to keep things calm at her local prison.
Listen, speak to me.
And helping someone's son write his first letter home in 8 months.
Well done. You should be really proud.
Thank you, miss.
An extraordinary job done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
We'll talk more about Send Russell. Jody, it is such an emotive subject. It speaks about our children or our grandchildren or your child or children or grandchild or grandchildren, and it's so keen. We'll come to those views. Russell, Jody, don't go anywhere. But I want to come to another story because I appreciate that now we have been doing the education brief for getting on for nearly an hour. So let's look at a story that's what's called the second lead, the second strongest story on the front page of one of our newspapers today, the Daily Telegraph, with a very what's called punchy headline. The Nottingham killer was not sectioned after a previous violent attack because he was black, an inquiry has been told. I speak of Valdo Calicane, who tried to break into a neighbour's flat during a psychotic episode in May 2020, but was not committed to a psychiatric hospital after professionals considered, and I quote, an overrepresentation of young black males in detention, close quotes. He was subsequently sectioned multiple times because of violent behaviour, and many of you will recall he went on to kill those two students, Barnaby Webber and Grace O'Malley Kumar, who were both aged 19, and school caretaker Ian Coates, who was 65 and within weeks of retiring. He also attempted to kill three other people during an attack. That was in June 2023, so it could have been prevented more than 3 years prior to that. He was given an indefinite hospital order in 2024 after the murder charges were downgraded to manslaughter on the grounds of diminished responsibility. Understandably, the families of the victims have repeatedly raised concerns over alleged failures. That's the background. Let's bring into the conversation Julian Hendy, founder and CEO of 100 Families. And sadly, this touches your personal situation. I wonder, without causing you too much distress, Mr. Hendy, if you can elaborate on that. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thanks for having me on. My father was killed by a man who was well known to local mental health services, who had a long history of drug abuse and serious violence. 4 days before he fatally assaulted my dad, his family were calling out for him to be detained because they were so worried about him, and nothing was done. And 4 days later, he stabbed my dad in the back and stabbed him in the neck, and he died 7 days later as I was holding his hand. My background was as a journalist. I've been an investigative journalist for a long time, and I found that after my dad was killed, and he was a very decent man, I loved him. He was very funny, kind, you know, never relied on the state to help him until the state failed him. And after my dad was killed, I found it was just so difficult to get any information about how this could have happened, what the build-up was. And as a result of that, I set up the 100 Families charity, because there are 100 to 120 cases like this, mental health-related homicides in the UK each and every year. These are not rare events. That's 20% of the total. And our charity tries to support families going through this, to try and make sure they get the answers they need and some accountability for what happens.
So just to clarify, 100 to 120 families this year will almost certainly lose relatives in similar circumstances, Julian.
Absolutely, absolutely. And most of them are 80% happen within families and friends, around 17% are of strangers. So it's the families of people with serious mental illness that are most at risk for this. What we know is that most people with mental health problems are never violent, but there is undoubtedly a small number of people with very serious mental illnesses who can be extremely violent when unwell, and those are the people that need to be better looked after, but they need to be more assertively monitored to make sure that they keep themselves safe, their families safe, and the wider public safe.
I've got to note that you went to the opening day of the inquiry yesterday. I hope that is correct, and if so, what do you take from day one?
I was there yesterday. I was supporting the families there. I mean, I think this looks like it's going to be a thorough process. You know, I think the counsellor to the inquiry spoke for about 6 or 7 hours on just outlining all the problems that potentially the inquiry will look at, not only in Nottingham, but also wide, you know, across the country as well. It does look like it's going to be a thorough process. I was amazed by the number of lawyers there, you know, representing all the different agencies.
Julian, how many were there, just roughly, would you say?
Well, it was like a sports hall full of lawyers.
What a hideous thought.
The families were there. I mean, and it's rightly so. This has to be a proper experience, you know, it has to be a proper process, you know, yes, with the thought, you know, and I see that. But and the families will be represented by, you know, they've got good legal representation, but I hope it will lead to some change. I think the inquiry is unprecedented. There's not been an inquiry into mental health related homicides before, you know, so I hope this will make a difference. The trouble is we've often seen, you know, investigations and, you know, similar reports by agencies, and they all make recommendations, but nothing changes. And I've seen very little evidence of anybody actually learning. You know, the council's inquiry gave a list yesterday of all the committees at Nottinghamshire Healthcare that's supposed to monitor quality and risk and keep things in place, and all of them failed because none of them actually learned anything from any of the previous cases.
So you're a journalist. I can put a couple of headlines to you and ask your interpretation. Nottingham killer freed, quotes, because he was black, close quotes. Triple killer freed after mental health workers feared detaining him could be, quotes, racist, close quotes. Fair interpretation of what you heard and saw yesterday, Julian?
Yes, I think it's slightly more nuanced than that. I mean, it's widely known that black people are more likely to be sectioned than white people. There was a review of the Mental Health Act to try and address it, and that was widely covered amongst mental health professionals, so I think that could well be true. But I haven't actually seen the research on the ethnicity of homicide offenders that might actually go to the bottom of that. So I think, you know, the problem for me is that, you know, do we know whether black people, you know, is it that black people don't get timely care and treatment, so they end up in crisis? You know, do more black people live in poverty if they had more adverse child experiences? I haven't seen the research, so we don't really know, but I can well imagine that people will be worried. I mean, the bottom line is the decisions for detention should be taken on risk. Would you like this person to meet my children, you know, if they were released? And we know, we heard yesterday that mental health professionals in Nottingham were frightened of seeing him alone. They had to go in twos to see him, and yet they still thought it was safe for him not to be detained and not to be you know, to be detained in hospital for proper care and treatment.
And lastly, I read he, well, let me just get this right, an NHS review found Callaghan was not forced to take antipsychotic drugs before the rampage as he was scared of needles.
Well, apparently he had two COVID shots beforehand, and I don't know whether he's got any tattoos. I mean, somebody suggested that, but I do think that that's why you need more assertive care and treatment. The problem is the current mental health system doesn't deal at all with people who don't think they're unwell. It's based on consent. You know, if you broke your leg, Nick, would you want to be treated in hospital? But if you don't think you're unwell, would you take medication or attend appointments? And the current system is not assertive enough to look after the small number of people who are potentially dangerous when unwell.
Good luck with what you're trying to do, Julian. Good to speak with you again. I'm sorry to make you relive the circumstances over your late father, Julian Hendy, founder and CEO of 100 Families, in the aftermath of the unnecessary killing of his father, Philip. We might take calls on that, but you're queuing up to talk about SEND and those reforms, unsurprisingly. As we've just concluded another call, the Cabinet exclusively here on LBC, this one with Bridget Phillipson, the Education Secretary. Russell, in Skipton, your take on what you heard. Russell, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Great to speak to you.
Good to have you on, sir.
I'm dad of a special needs young woman now. She's 25. She's had an EHCP and previous to that a statement for...
Yeah.
She's just coming out of the system, but Gideon, you know, the fights we've had over the years to get what she needs.
Fights with local authorities, I assume. Is that right?
Yeah, and schools, you know. And so I have some fears about the new... I have some hopes and I have some fears, but probably the fears are far more than the hopes.
Do you want to run through them for me?
Say again.
Do you want to run through them for me?
Yeah, so I had to read the Code of Practice because Grace had an EHCP, it's a statutory document. And when you go into meetings, and in the meetings, and there's one of you and there's seven people around you from the local authority, the teachers.
So who would they be? Teachers and local authority and a lawyer or two?
And specialist inputs, maybe speech and language, because my daughter has autism. And I couldn't believe when the Secretary of State said nonverbal was not complex.
Well, I mean, to me... And I'm not a teacher. Unfortunately, I don't have non-verbal children or grandchildren. But non-verbal to me is pretty bloody complex, mate, to be honest with you.
Absolutely. You know, the politicians are obviously scared of saying anything, doing anything, but they just need to stand up and just be honest with you about things. But the fear I have is that the ISPs, which are the individual support plans...
That's what we're moving to now with these new reforms. Yep, yep, yep.
We'll have no legal backing. We'll have no... Because, let's be honest, people go and push, and I fought for years to get the EHCP. It's a legal document. So when those seven people around you saying, well, we can't do this, we can't do that, we'll say, well, Grace is protected by the law, so will you please comply with the law? And then they look at you and they think, oh, this person's not going to go away.
Yeah.
So when you're confronted with... teachers and maybe other specialists in with the ISPs and you're going for your review and who's going to monitor it and you go, so, well, it's not working. Well, we don't... And you can't say, well, Grace is protected or my young person is protected by the law, so...
As an outsider looking in, and as I think even the Secretary of State agreed at some point, some of this is because they feel some funds have to be saved. Some money has to be saved. Yes. The importance of education is important.
Yep.
But is there abuse of EHCPs? From as I'm an outsider looking in and you're an insider looking out, what is the reality as you see it?
I don't think so. What happens is, obviously, like benefits, people will abuse things. But the majority of people, if you're going to, as a parent and a family, fight, and honestly, it is a fight for an EHCP, you don't do it lightly. You push, you have to have it well written, it is monitored, it is reviewed, and it has, there's a very good code of practice behind it. And those protections for the family are in the code of practice. Will the new code of practice, because it's been, I've read the document, the reform document, will those protections for the family and the young person transfer over to the ISP, the individual support plans? I don't think so, and I don't think people are abusing it. They fight for their children because they get one chance, Nick. They don't. No, my daughter's now 25. She can't do it again. You know, she's had 10 settings we had to go, when finally we had to pull her out of
mainstream. Really? Really?
And the local authority here in North Yorkshire took 10 months to transfer. I funded it. I funded my daughter's education. Not everybody can do that.
No, they can't. No.
So it's, I just hope that what she's trying to do, I understand it's budgetary, I just hope, but I fear that those protections for the families, and how are they going to plan for these teachers who, you know, need the training in special needs?
Well, this is it, isn't it? It is whether there is that provision. Good luck with your daughter, Russell. I must go because I've got headlines to get to, but thank you. Best wishes to the family. Coming up after the news, there's another element that we need to discuss of the Secretary of State, the Education Secretary's appearance here, which is what's so-called graduate jobs apocalypse. Extraordinary increase in the number of university graduates who cannot get jobs. I asked Bridget Phillotson, should we stop encouraging some young folk to go to university?
We are massively expanding what we're doing around apprenticeships for young people, also other routes into high-quality technical and vocational education. That's absolutely essential. I don't think it's one or the other. For me, it's about young people having good options, good pathways, the choices that are right for them.
Are you glad you didn't go to university? You're now an engineer, a hairdresser, whatever you might be, a tradesman or woman, and you're glad you didn't go? Or, as we get ready for Easter, which, as I recall, is the revision period for your A-levels, are you determined to get those grades and go to uni? We'll take your calls on that. We've got to 9:32. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC News, though. Dominic Ellis.
Peter Mandelson has been released on bail, returning to his home in North London overnight. He was arrested yesterday on suspicion of misconduct in public office after the release of the latest Jeffrey Epstein files. The former Labour minister denies wrongdoing. The Education Secretary, Bridget Phillotson, has told LBC's called Cabinet that no child will lose support as part of changes to the special educational needs system. It was announced yesterday that by 2035, care plans in England will be reserved only for children with the most complex needs. And Britain has announced further sanctions against Russia, the largest since the start of the invasion of Ukraine 4 years ago today. They're aimed at cutting off critical oil revenues for Moscow. LBC weather dry and mild, with sunny spells for large parts of England, some rain for the west of Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
Whether your dreams involve epic adventure, trying something you've never done before, or just some time to fully relax, you can bank on Lloyds to help make it happen. We've been asking listeners what their aspirations are for the year ahead to help create the ultimate prize packages to inspire that first step. Enter now for your chance to win one of three incredible experiences, thanks to Lloyds and the nation's aspirations. Choose the prize for you at lbc.co.uk.
Tackle that laundry pile with Hotpoint washing machines available at AO. Use Fabric Care Tech for a gentler wash and keeping your favourite clothes lasting longer. Plus, we'll deliver and install them when it suits you. Hotpoint's trusted appliances from the UK's most trusted electrical retailer. Shop now at AO.com. Comparison with same model without Fabric Care feature. Verify trust at AO.com/trust and hotpoint.co.uk/trustpilot.
Listeners, we interrupt the airwaves to share an incredible discovery. The reason why Britain hasn't been so great of late is because the country hasn't been eating enough Weetabix. We must get to work in rebuilding Great Britain, Bix by Bix. By delivering Weetabix to whoever plans the traffic diversions, to delivery drivers who can't seem to find your house,
and people who don't stack the dishwasher properly.
To Britain, we must say, have you had your Weetabix?
Turn ordinary into the extraordinary every day with the Lexus LBX. Whilst most SUVs are big and brash, the LBX is quietly bold and confident. Refined luxury crafted into a compact SUV. The Lexus LBX. What car's best small SUV 2024 and 2025?
Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Well, we can do both ends of the education spectrum, aren't we? We're talking about going from primary school to big school to secondary school, and we're going to be talking about our graduates as well, both drowning in debt and not getting work. I repeat the number I said to the Secretary of State, 45% lift in the past 12 months for graduates getting jobs. There is an argument, isn't it? And I say this not in a dismissive fashion at all. Go and be a plumber. I don't mean that, go and be an electrician. I mean, you will never be out of work. Be a hairdresser. You're not going to get... AI can't cut hair, can it? There can't be an AI hairdresser. They're not going to bring that in, are they? Just some machine comes up. They're not going to bring in... Your shower doesn't work. You're not going to get an AI plumber, are you? Unfortunately, all these jobs that all these kids train for, to be graphic designers or whatever, just get AI. Or the other thing, farm it out. If people don't want to come into the office, just go to work elsewhere. But let's talk at the SEND reforms. Jodie in Chelmsford, you're on the radio, Jodie. What are you going to tell me? Good morning. Hello.
How are you?
I'm all right, I think. Yeah, not bad. What about you, more importantly? How's Chelmsford today? County town of Essex.
It's not raining at the moment.
That's the best that's going for Chelmsford. It's not raining.
Yeah, the reason why I'm calling is that I have a SEND child in mainstream.
Yep. What age? What age?
She's in year nine.
Right,
so
okay.
In effect, this shouldn't affect him.
No,
but
he'd be about 15, 16, would he?
But obviously, you know, with EHCPs, they can see children through to 25.
Yep.
And, you know, there's very much focus around to 16. Now, children are meant to be in education till at least 18 now, you know, and that's not really being discussed. I think for me, it is a cost cutting exercise. It's all, you know, this is what we're seeing constantly in the news about, you know, oh, SEND's costing us this, you know, and it's just very much a negative towards the SEND community. With the EHCP, it's an education and health care plan. So it's not just school. It's not just school.
Right.
You know, so there's a lot involved with it. And, you know, with children, it can be, you know, for my son, for example, recently, he's developed OCD.
Oh, right. When did that come on then, Jodie?
It's happened around puberty.
Around puberty.
Lots of children, when they go to high school, especially girls, that's when a lot of changes can occur.
Right.
And it all can become a problem, and that's when people don't go to school.
Jodie, I'm going to be candid with you. Your line isn't the best quality. Can I ask you just to briefly sub down the main two points you want to get across before I fear we might lose the line completely. Jodie?
The main two points are that the government need to spend more money in CAMHS, mental health, supporting children through school. You can't get any CAMHS. We've had to go private. And also that there needs to be more support in schools with teaching assistants, because there's not enough and they're not paid enough. The TAs have been the backbone to my son being able to attend school. And, you know, there's not really mentions of TAs within these, you know, proposals.
The line suddenly got a lot clearer. How hopeful are you with your son's GCSEs exam results? Do you think he's in a good place?
Fortunately for us, the school he's at, we are very, very pleased with the school, and the SEND support in school is fantastic.
Jodie, I've got to admit, it's quite extraordinary. I say the line is great, and then I swear, and why don't you listen back on the LBC app? This is the presenter's curse. Oh, the line's much clearer. Let me ask you a question really important about your son's educational attempt. So I will leave it there, but just giving my best wishes, because obviously we are starting to approach the revision period. I remember myself from when I did O-levels, ask your grandparents, and A-levels, and my sons did GCSE and A-levels, after which they progressed to university, as a lot of people did. And aside from even the SEND reforms, another big topic is university and graduates. Not only are those with Plan 2 student loans drowning in debt, average debt around 45 to 50,000 pounds. We're now seeing data which shows the number of graduate vacancies tumbled by 45% in the past 12 months. That means many university leavers can't get into employment in the first place, something we discussed almost exactly an hour ago with Education Secretary Bridget Phillips. And it started with a question from James, who was in Colchester.
So I borrowed £45,000 on a Plan 2 loan and graduated in 2018. I now owe over £69,000. In the last year, I paid back £3,700, but £5,000 was added in interest. So even though I'm paying off my debt, it's still growing. If that trend continues, I'll repay almost double what I borrowed over the next 22 years and still never clear the balance. Does the education acceptor accept that this is fundamentally unfair, and will she commit to ending the punishing RPI plus 3% interest rate and reviewing the frozen repayment thresholds?
And I have to say, James, you're one of around 5.8 million people who took out these Plan 2, as they're called, loans. Secretary of State, can you give that guarantee?
So we are going to continue to look at this. I do recognise what James has set out. I would just add, in addition to what he'd said, that at the end of 30 years, that will be written off in full. So those who have taken on Plan 2 loans... It gets written off at the end of that,
respectfully,
period.
So you and I and every taxpayer pays it.
Yeah. So that is part
of... Well, that's not good either, is it?
Well... This is part of the problem with the system. Well,
surely the problem is this young man took a £42,000. He's now at 69. I mean, he can't even cover the interest. I appreciate you didn't bring this in, but, I mean, for instance, why not go to CPI? Can you give us that pledge now?
No, I can't. I mean, I will answer that. As you say, we didn't bring this system in. It operated from 2012 to 2023. The part of the challenge with reforming the student finance system is that whilst it can often seem superficially attractive to do things like changing the interest rate, it doesn't always have the desired effect in terms of making the system fairer, particularly for less well-off students. It's a really complex system. It's, you know, evolved over time. It's not a system that I would have put in place, but we are where we are. We are going to look at if there's anything that we can do on this. Of course, we keep it open and under review. We've increased the threshold for repayment this year. It's then frozen in subsequent years. But I do recognise the pressure that many people who
wouldn't it be
went
a great
to university during this period are still facing.
To talk later today, later this week, with the Prime Minister and the Chancellor and say, look, come on, we've got to move from RPI to CPI, just as a gesture of where we want to go. Why can't we move to that?
Well, that will happen over time anyway, because everything is moving towards a measure of CPI. But the challenge with this is that the way the interest rate operates means that those who earn more pay back more. So higher earners in this system repay more because they've had the benefit of university education and are earning more. So there can sometimes be unintended consequences.
But
there are sometimes unintended consequences of making some of those changes that don't necessarily make
it fairer.
You're
aware of the level of anger this is causing?
Yes, I am.
You
are? I am.
All right. OK. James, good luck. Thank you. We're staying on a related question. I think Joel is in Egham. Joel, you're on the radio. Hello. Yours is a slightly different take on university tuition. Go ahead.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good. Your question to Bridget Phillipson.
My question is, what policies are we going to bring in to help graduates like me? Because I've been a graduate for just under 2 years now. I graduated in 24 summer. Mm-hmm. I'm in 49.
What did you study, Joel?
I did marketing.
Marketing. What did you hope to get? What kind of job did you want?
So I wanted to go into assistant and then hopefully get into managing, and then consulting is the...
I want to talk the jobless side, but just out of interest, are you in debt?
Yes, 49,000.
And that grows each year, does it?
It does. So I was looking at it last night, and I've made £1,600 worth of payments towards my debt.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But it has gone up by close to 4,000.
Okay, let's stay if we may. And I'm sorry to hear that, Joel, but I want to get the Secretary of State for Education. You'll be aware we're talking vacancies for university leavers fell 45% in January compared with a year earlier. Why aren't these kids and folk getting jobs?
A part of it, my kind of best estimation of some of this, is we are seeing some quite big shifts in the labour market, particularly in response to areas like technology and use of AI, and that is changing behaviours of some of the big kind of graduate recruiters in terms of the people they need and where they need them. I do think that is a part of it. And, you know, Joel's question about what we're going to do to help people in his position, there are a number of things. So, you know, we're freezing rail fares to make it easier for commuters so that they're not...
Well, how's it helping if he hasn't got a job? He hasn't got anywhere to go.
You have to travel to interviews most of the time these days, but I hope that Joel is successful in getting a good job soon. We also want to make it easier for young people to get on the housing ladder, building more homes, investing more also in social and affordable housing. In social and affordable housing.
He's got another £3,400 in debt over the year. How can he possibly take on a mortgage?
Well, I really hope that Joel is successful in his job hunt, and when he's able to do...
But there are jobs. Vacancies for university leavers fell 45%.
Yeah, so I really hope that Joel is successful in getting that job. And when he does, I hope he is able to see the benefit of having a more stable economy where interest rates are coming down, and that means that people's mortgages will also come down. And it is cheaper, and it's cheaper to get a mortgage.
Secretary of State,
we're building more homes and more social and affordable homes too.
700,000 graduates are claiming benefits. Should everyone go to university?
No, I don't think everybody should go to university.
Shouldn't we be encouraging people not to go to university, possibly take up a trade? What can we do in that skills area?
So we are massively expanding what we're doing around apprenticeships for young people, also other routes into high-quality technical and vocational education. That's absolutely essential. I don't think it's one or the other. For me, it's about young people having good options, good pathways, the choices that are right for them.
That's Bridget Phillipson, and we'll go to the other end of the education scale, from SEND, from primary into secondary school, from SEND up to university, and of course... university and beyond, with these folks unable to get jobs. It's 9:46, LBC News headlines then. Dominic Ellis.
Speaking on LBC's Call the Cabinet, the Education Secretary has said that she can guarantee no child will lose support as part of overhauls to the special educational needs system in England. Peter Mandelson has been released on bail hours after his arrest on suspicion of misconduct in public office. And Britain has announced new sanctions against Russia, the largest since the start of the invasion of Ukraine 4 years ago today. LBC weather, dry and mild, with sunny spells for large parts of England. Rain for the west of Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M3's been closed southbound at Junction 8 at the A303. It's following an accident and there are queues. Northbound is open but very busy because of onlookers. More problems on the M25. Anti-clockwise, there are delays from Junction 3 at the M20 up to Junction 1B at Dartford. It's following an accident where one lane is closed for recovery. These big problems do continue on the trains. Gatwick Express services are completely suspended. It's because of the ongoing investigation and right near to Purley, which also means that Thameslink and Southern are disrupted. And on the underground, there are severe delays still on the Piccadilly and Metropolitan lines, a minor on the Bakerloo and Central.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Ukraine, have we helped enough after 4 years of brave resistance? And the government wants to make it harder for you to move house to get your child into a good school.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
With over 50 years' experience at Fidelity, we believe there's a difference between investing and being invested. Investing is having access to guidance, tools and expert insights. Being invested means feeling confident about your future. Investing is choosing from a wealth of investment options. Being invested means focusing on your long-term goals. For ISAs, pensions or advice, be truly invested with Fidelity. Go to fidelity.co.uk. Your capital is at risk. Terms apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
This time last year, Hassan was working in sales and spent his evenings gaming. Now, he's working as a prison officer.
You know what's going to happen, it's not worth it. Let's just go in there.
He's tackled cell fires, got through to some of the most challenging prisoners, and helped support their rehabilitation. He's done things he once thought he was never capable of, but he still loves his gaming. An extraordinary job, done by someone like you. Search prison jobs now.
A Thameslink train is a place where you can just switch off. Where you have the chance to scroll your feeds as you roll past fields. Or simply relax with a podcast, playlist or power nap. Go with your flow and save with advanced tickets at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Big motoring world are big on value. But what does that mean for you? Well, we price check our cars every day, so we can give you the best price. Guaranteed. In fact, 95% of our cars are priced below market value. Big Motoring World, we're big on value. See website for nearest store. Visit bigmotoringworld.co.uk or one of our stores for our price promise and terms and conditions.
Why are you abseiling down the front of your house, Ross? You have a staircase.
I like doing things the hard way, Albert.
Try something easier, Ross. Get cheaper off-peak energy. It's available at different times, like during the day or weekends. Just get a smart meter and choose a flexible scheme or tariff.
Ooh,
I could batch cook some quiche.
Perfect. With a smart meter, getting cheaper energy is easier than you think.
Eligibility varies. Action required. Schemes and tariffs available to selected customers.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics, with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Moving up the age scale to graduates, Lucy, you'll be the first caller on that. Just a couple of emails or social media to put a full stop. On the SEND reform, Steve in Buckinghamshire puts in a lot of interesting detail. A rough guide, he says, the three bands have 15 levels. If you're level three, it's not possible for your child to go to mainstream school. Level two can go with full-time assistance. Level one can go with limited support. Steve goes on, the government is trying to force schools to take all kids, but without paying for individual needs. It's a disaster decision for those who want to learn and can learn but need help. Classes of 30, with currently five or six, send children per class with one teacher. One assistant is not enough. And Dom in Cobham says, thank you for resurrecting VAT on private schools with Bridget Phillips, and it astounds me this is not discussed anymore. We'll never forget the appalling policy placing the failings of the government with state schooling on the shoulders of hard-working parents who are able to do what they see as the right thing for their children. All she has achieved is widening the gap. Mind the gap, as they say. Now let's talk about graduates and the uphill mountain they face now, getting a job. 45% lift in those lack of graduate jobs. It's been called a graduate jobs apocalypse. Lucy's in Muswell Hill. Your view on it. Lucy, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Thank you for taking my call.
Not at all.
I'm incensed, to be perfectly honest, having listened twice now to the same conversations with the two graduates you had on.
Mm-hmm.
I was appalled that the rate at which their interest is being calculated and added to their loan,
yep,
and the repayments clearly are not getting anywhere.
No, they're not even covering the interest in one case.
No. And the cynicism that, you know, sort of, oh, well, they can get a mortgage, they can get this, they can get that. Poor people can't even get a job.
No.
And they were just sort of dismissed out of hand. And I think what it really needs fundamentally is someone to come along and take hold of the whole graduate funding system.
Yeah.
And rather than give them these extortionate loans, I think that somebody needs to say, right, okay, you and I are going to be paying when it gets to 40 years and they've written off. How about we cut that part out, we take all the funding away, we don't give them these extortionate loans now. Everybody who's ever in their life been to university pays a small percentage in tax each month, and these people stop having this noose wrapped around their neck for 40 years.
I think that's a very fair way of looking at it. But I wonder, Lucy, have we sold a lie to too many young people that they have to go to university? They don't.
Certainly.
There are plenty of great...
Yes.
Sorry, Lucy, your reaction, Lucy.
Yes, absolutely, most certainly. I think that, you know, sort of, I think it was Tony Blair that brought in the...
Yes.
Originally, it's sort of £3,000 tuition fees.
Yeah.
And the charge of everyone, I think his target was minimum of 50% going to university at the time. And I just think that things have got out of hand, and these people are never going to be able to present to a bank, please, could I have a mortgage?
No.
Oh, yes, this is my loan, and I pay this much each month, and it's on a, you know, it's on a gradual scale. My salary will increase, but then so does my, you know, my repayment to my loan.
Here's the problem.
No one
yours
is ever going to want to lend these people any money.
No,
it's
yours
ridiculous.
Yours is a wonderfully philanthropic gesture, which is fantastic.
I just think that way, at least, I mean, you and I are going to be paying in 40 years' time,
yeah,
when these people can't repay. So how about everybody pays a bit now,
but Lucy,
and these people live?
That solves this crisis, but it doesn't solve the crisis that they don't have any jobs to go to. So, all right, that gets them out of 50, 60, 70K of debt, which is a very noble initiative. But what are we going to do about giving them work? What are they going to do for 40 years when they should be at work?
Well, how about this lovely government go back to changing their VAT and their tax and employers funding a sort of tax system so that a few more people are taken on by employers?
Makes sense to me. Lucy, a tremendous, heartwarming gesture. I don't think it'll be taken up, but it's a story that's not going away. Thanks, Lucy. Have a good day. Louise in Fulham. Louise, your idea or your reaction to this. Good morning.
Yeah, hi, Nick. Look,
hello.
We agree it's kind of nuts to start your life indebted like that. We've got a 17-year-old, and he's at a pretty smart, well-known sort of private school.
Right.
And the school is trying to sell apprenticeships to the kids because it's a modern, forward-thinking school, and it knows that apprenticeships are the way forward. You start debt-free, and you get a degree at the end of it. And there's hardly any uptake. I think one person did an apprenticeship at a top bank. I think one of the problems, Nick, is, and I don't mean to be rude, but you're kind of part of it, is that apprenticeships are being sold as something that tradies do. So they're being sold as what you do if you want to become a plumber or an electrician, and that's great. But they're so much more than that. They've really developed. And, you know, I went to university, my husband went to university, we're all sort of lawyers and bankers.
Mm-hmm.
And while I look now at the top law firms, the top magic circle law firms are paying people to do law degrees with them. The top banks, Morgan Stanley, they're all paying people to do finance degrees.
But that's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, you can get a medical degree, an engineering degree. So the point is, you can be paid and get a degree at the end of it. But
Hang on, sorry to talk over you. You mean you can train as a doctor without having to go to university?
Yeah, I googled it just before.
That's sensational.
They introduced it in 2024.
Where do you train? At a hospital?
So you do part time at a hospital and part time at a university, but you're paid by the government to do the training. Although, don't ask me too much about the medical ones, because no one in my family is a doctor. But I can tell you quite a lot about the law ones, for example. It takes 5 to 6 years, because I've been googling it to try and get my son to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So it takes 5 to 6 years. You come out with a law degree, and you're paid to do it.
Is your son interested in law?
So here's the thing. He's interested in law. So obviously for me, this is a no-brainer. Why would you rack up £120,000 of debt when you could be paid to go to the top law firm, Clifford Chance, and get a law degree?
What's it called? The magic circle or something they're in?
It's magic circle. And you're guaranteed, I went to a top 10 law firm, and you're guaranteed a job at the end of it. And I'm not kidding, even though his school, his private school, encourages apprenticeships and has really great links with people all over the country, his reaction was flat out, "Well, no, I'm going to university." And I think that's a problem. I think there's a real
Is that the social side?
It's partly the social side. Don't get me wrong, he likes to party. But I think it's more that we really need to rebrand apprenticeships. People are still in that mindset that apprenticeships are what you do. And I don't mean this in a bad way. When you're working class and you don't have an option to go to university, and it couldn't be more wrong.
Mm. I wonder, lastly, whether that social element, though, is what's going to preclude a lot of children, a lot of young people, so not children, well, they are children, but a lot of young people are investigating this, lastly, Louise.
Yeah, definitely. Don't get me wrong, my son's a rower. He wants to do lots of sport. He wants to hang out. He wants to party.
Of course he does.
To travel.
Yeah.
No, I get that. But also, I'm not sure parents are being realistic enough with their children. We sat ours down and went, "Look, you're talking 120 grand of debt, you know, within the next sort of 10 years.
And that's what is the reality for so many. Louise, that has to be the last word. Indeed, you are the last word of the day. Best wishes to your boy with whatever he chooses to do. Apologies to George, Izzy, John. We're done for another day. The talking continues, of course. But if you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the LBC app, where you can also stay up to date with all the latest news, videos and opinions. Download the official LBC app for free from your app store now. James O'Brien's The Other Side of the News here on LBC. I'll be back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. The time is approaching 10 o'clock, and it is 4 years to the day since Vladimir Putin's illegal invasion of Ukraine, an exercise that was, remember, expected by almost everybody, including most definitely Vladimir Putin, to take mere days. It was supposed to be over, not by Christmas, as the saying usually goes, but by the end of the weekend. That was an epic miscalculation. I wonder how much you know, or how much you think you know. I don't know how much I know about how well or how poorly Ukraine is faring in this David and Goliath battle, but I think we can fairly say a hell of a lot better than anybody predicted or expected. But one more warning that we're already in World War III just landed.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Education Secretary has insisted on LBC that changes to the special educational needs system in England will deliver better life chances for children. £4 billion proposals outlined yesterday included an overhaul to children's education, health and care plans. By 2035, the support packages will be reserved only for young people with the most complex needs. But speaking on LBC's Call the Cabinet this morning, Bridget Phillipson stressed that no child will lose support.
All children will have an individual support plan. That will mean more children than right now who the only way to get that support is through an education, health and care plan. Where we make that transition from primary to secondary, so that's children who are currently in year two, who in 2029-30 will be starting that transition process to secondary school. Of the children right now who currently have an education, health and care plan, we estimate that one in eight will move on to an individual support plan rather than being in the EHCP process.
The Education Secretary also told LBC that she is aware of the anger that the student loan system is causing. Bridget Phillipson says she will continue to review it. Peter Mandelson has been released on bail, returning to his home in North London overnight. He was arrested yesterday on suspicion of misconduct in public office after the release of the latest Jeffrey Epstein files. The former Labour minister denies wrongdoing. Legal commentator Joshua Rosenberg says investigations are likely to be long and complex.
This sort of case depends on a paper trail, although when we say paper, we mean electronic records. And the question really is whether the electronic records still exist, whether they've been preserved. So what the police are going to have to do is not just look through Peter Mandelson's computers to see if there are any emails from, you know, nearly 20 years ago, but also look at public records, departmental records, ministerial records.
Britain has announced further sanctions against Russia, the largest since the start of the invasion of Ukraine 4 years ago today. They're aimed at cutting off critical oil revenues for Moscow. It's emerged some GPs yet to prescribe weight loss jabs. That's despite a mass rollout on the NHS in England starting last summer. The government's announced new financial incentives to encourage doctors to recommend the drugs to patients who need them. And a filmmaker is quitting as a BAFTA judge over the Academy's handling of a racist slur at Sunday's Film Awards. Jonty Richardson says he feels compelled to withdraw. The Tourette's campaigner John Davidson shouted the slur during a presentation by black actors Michael B. Jordan and Delroy Lindo. BAFTA has apologised to them. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 21 at 10,663. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.14. LBC weather, dry and mild with sunny spells for large parts of England, some rain for the west of Scotland and Northern Ireland, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
And now your travel news. It's starting to look a bit congested on the A4872 southbound. We're hearing reports people are slowing down to look at the Volkswagen Transporter sales event. Apparently you can get £1,500 off any new Transporter. That's any variant, any trim, and any colour until the 31st of March. Now that's a deal worth queuing for. Search VW Transporter offers. UK retail customers, 18 plus. Discount applies to price of all new Transporters ordered by 31st of March and delivered by 30th of June.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Good morning. It's 4 minutes after 10. And I suppose whatever the phenomenon that we are about to examine is precisely, we are on the side of the guilty, I think, rather than the innocent. Because if we're to ask questions about why the support for or interest in Ukraine has waned, so, well, I'm not sure support has, but interest in Ukraine's battle against Russia has waned so markedly in the 4 years since it started, then the media will obviously be part of the answer to that question. If you think back to Brexit, right? Not in a critical way yet. Don't send me the messages complaining that I keep reminding you how stupid you were in 2016. But have we ever felt as unified as a country and as a continent as we did in the immediate aftermath of Putin's invasion of Ukraine? You think back to the consensus in Parliament. Nigel Farage, of course, wasn't in Parliament at the time, and he continues to consider Vladimir Putin to be the most admirable politician on the planet, to the point, I suppose, where his former crony, who was taking bribes from the Kremlin, or at least from a Kremlin stooge to spout Kremlin propaganda in the European Parliament, probably didn't realise that that he was going against party policy at the time. But, I mean, him exempted, everybody was pretty clear about the illegality and the unacceptability of what Putin did. The ludicrous argument that somehow it had been provoked or that NATO was to blame, although popularised by Donald Trump. I don't know whether Donald Trump is taking bribes from Kremlin stooges to spout propaganda lines from the Kremlin. I don't know whether any of the people who spout propaganda lines from the Kremlin, and unlike Nathan Gill, haven't been convicted of any crimes, are secretly in receipt of kickbacks or blackmail. I don't know. But apart from absolute idiots or traitors, the idea that the invasion of Ukraine was somehow provoked by NATO or by Ukrainians is palpably obscene, any more than the invasion of Poland by Adolf Hitler was provoked by Poles. So we know that. But what we don't have much recent experience of is consensus. The fact that everybody agreed with that, even Boris Johnson, in the spirit of stopped clocks since time immemorial, and of course, despite his well-documented partying with KGB spies or a KGB spy and his family, and slipping the net of his own security officers in order to go and spend an undocumented weekend in the company of said KGB spy, even Boris Johnson managed to say and do all the right things with regard to Ukraine, although almost certainly by accident, given that everything he ever did was motivated entirely by self-interest. What would be best for me in this current scenario? I think backing Volodymyr Zelensky and Ukraine will be best for me, Boris Johnson, in this current scenario. But perhaps that's an unfair quibble. Let's look instead at the fact that everybody was on the same side. I can't remember. Is there anything else like that in the last 10 years, where we were all on the same side? You sort of go back further and look at military interventions in the Middle East. You have extraordinary disagreement and dispute. Probably the people opposed to the Second Gulf War have been vindicated rather more by history than the people who were in favour of it. So apart from the various traitors and shysters who were talking about poking the Russian bear and either wittingly or unwittingly operating a propaganda arm for Vladimir Putin's Kremlin, we were all more or less in agreement on this. And then you had that extraordinary experience of welcoming refugees, something that is so entirely at odds with the current flavour of this country. And yes, I know that they were white and European refugees, but they were still refugees and therefore subject to all of the same criticisms that other refugees would be subjected to. They, you know, could have signed on for benefits. They were taking our jobs. They were doing all the things that refugees have been accused of doing since time immemorial. Go back to the 1930s, and it was Jews, Russian Jews in particular, that the Daily Mail was encouraging British people to despise and reject. But the Ukrainians didn't suffer from any of that. The Ukrainian refugee project, albeit that it was largely funded and footed by the public as opposed to the government, was a glorious success. We probably all know people who invited Ukrainian refugees into their home with largely positive results. So the country was more or less united in its outlook. The welcome mat was rolled out for refugees when you think that it was just a few, 2 years before somebody was turned into a folk hero by Nigel Farage for suggesting that we should be burning refugees to death in their own beds. 2 years before that, we were rolling out the welcome mat for all of the Ukrainian refugees. And I can't remember anything that spoke of similar.